Bruce Birch. Who's lying? The expert or the State Department? The U.S. State Department said today that Iran could produce a nuclear bomb within 16 days, which is, according to Hans Blix, the former U.N. weapons inspector, impossible. In a statement made April 3rd, Blix said it would take 5 years for Iran to enrich enough uranium to create a nuke. Scott Ritter, former weapons inspector, has also said that Iran has a small amount of weapons-grade uranium to enrich, supplied by China. He further says that domestic supplies of uranium within Iran are not pure enough to create weapons-grade nuclear material. Ever the queen of rhetoric, Condoleezza Rice said today that, quote, it is time for action, unquote, on international demands for Iran to stop uranium enrichment. British and foreign ministers shared her assertion. A car bomb went off in Iraq today, killing 26 human beings and wounding 7 more. The bomb, which was detonated in a Shiite town north of Baghdad, was targeting a Shiite mosque. No word from the U.S. about possible ties to the ongoing Iraqi civil war. Meanwhile, the U.S. has lost more than 2,359 soldiers in Bush's war. In a shift from recent legislation, GOP leaders are backing away from making undocumented immigration a felony. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is now blaming Democrats for wanting to retain the felony provision, which has some lawmakers backpedaling. The undocumented immigrants to the U.S. have staged massive protests demanding their ability to be U.S. citizens. The White House lashed out at reporters today for reporting the facts. Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, scolded the White House press corps for reporting on the story that Bush knew that trailers he said were being used to manufacture biological weapons were not, in fact, being used for that, and that Bush knew this when he said it. The report in question, which refuted the president's assertion that the trailers were WMD-related, was given to the president days before he did, in fact, say that the trailers were WMD-related. In Santa Cruz, California today, military recruiters were blocked from gaining access to a University of California building where a job fair was being held. A student-led group, Students Against War, apparently kept the recruiters from entering the building. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Over 15,000 people are ill from the events of 9/11. WTC cough, an ailment that apparently has created bad health for people who were near the World Trade Center that fateful day, has been on the increase since 2001. A number of formerly healthy, non-smoking people are now symptomatic with this illness. In an ironic turnabout, St. Bernard Parish in Louisiana is thinking of hiring the consulting firm of Michael Heck of a Job Brownie Brown to help them negotiate the maze of federal bureaucracy that has followed since the Hurricane Katrina tragedy. Brown is expected to pitch his firm to the parish to a near-capacity crowd. In a story reminiscent of the Twilight Zone, a town in California which has not held municipal elections in 20 years is thrust into the national spotlight. When it finally held elections and the clerk, who was responsible for counting the votes, has refused. The town has had 4 mayors in its 100-year history, all relatives of the town's founders. Nearly all the houses in the town are owned by the town itself. The established political order was upset earlier this year when 3 new residents filed for seats on the town council. One of them, Don Huff, was followed, had his electricity cut off, and was eventually evicted, he says, for standing up for a seat at the town council. Lawsuits have been filed to figure out who indeed can lead Vernon, California, for the near future. Silvio Berlusconi is not willing to cede his prime minister's seat in Italy. Berlusconi believes that spoiled ballots may contain a victory for him. His opposition, Romano Prodi, feels secure in his election and is moving forward with cabinet talks later this week. Over 234,000 seals were expected to be killed today in Canada. The contentious seal hunt is a government-sanctioned and is done to, quote, cull the seal population, unquote. The Canadian government says there are 6 million baby harp seals in existence. No word on why exactly these animals are a threat to humankind. Alaska, known for its open spaces and liberal privacy laws, is taking a step toward more governmental intrusion into personal privacy. Alaska's Governor Frank Murkowski is advocating the recriminalization of the private possession of marijuana. Presently, a person can have up to 4 ounces in his or her private home legally. For the Head On Radio Network, my name is Bruce Birch.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. It's Wednesday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is the little nightly dust-up we call Head On. Because that's how we do things around here. Head On. It means two things. It means go at things straight ahead. No screwing around. No right-wing filth. No right-wing spin. We don't do that here. No left-wing spin either. We're kind of the Joe Friday of conversation radio. Yeah, that's what we are. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. And there are facts in abundance for us out there this evening. God knows. God knows. Condoleezza Rice. At it again. If you were listening to the top of the hour news, and I'm sure you were, you know that they're, you know, Mom, they're doing it again. Mom, make them stop. They're lying some more. Lord, this gets tiresome. This is a Head-On special report. The Head-On Radio Network has just learned that Iran has blimps. That's right. Iran is planning. Blimps, whatever. Condoleezza Rice came out today and said that Iran is 16 days away from a nuclear weapon. We have, of course, heard this. Sad, tired, sick, sadistic line of hokum before. Of course we have. So it's a little bit different. The last time it was 45 minutes from nuking London. That was Saddam. Okay. This time it's days. They're 16 days away from being able to build a nuclear weapon. When nobody in their right mind thinks that is the truth. I tell you what, let's take a quick break because I forgot to unplug the phone with the ringer in it because I are a moron. We'll be back. This is Head On.
Been warped by the rain, driven by the snow, drunk and dirty, don't you know that I'm still willing.
carry to hatch a Peter Tom upon. I'm paving every kind of rig that's ever been made. I've driven the back road so I wouldn't get wet. If you give me weed, white sand wine, then you show me a sign, then I'll be willing to be moving.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerby. Did you know that every 3 minutes another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Wednesday night. It's a lovely Wednesday here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. I hope it's as lovely wherever it is that you are. I don't know. There might be a little bit of background noise from the springtime ritual and, well, various and sundry other things going. We got mice. That's Agnes. She's not behind the control panel right now. And, you know, it's spring. There's baseball and all kinds of stuff to do. And I've been... you know, I've been doing some things too, and you know, I wonder how. You know, it's one of those wonder how the other half lives kind of moments. I don't know. I don't know how it is with other talk show people, but you know, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and whine and cry or moan and groan or anything, but it takes a lot to put this show together. It takes a lot of hours, a lot of reading, a lot of just sort of trying to pick up information by osmosis and any other means. And in the middle of things, oh, well, you got to, let's see, install a washing machine and go and pick up the dryer and do the dryer. And then you got to chase down the UPS guy because the people that you ordered the new notebook computer from didn't write your address down right. So the extra money you paid for what did John Lennon say? Life is what happens when you make other plans. So, you know, that's where we are. And in the middle of this, you know, you try to get ready to do high-quality professional talk radio. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun. Now, on the line with us right now, a woman by the name of Tamara Drought, an author of a new book called Strapped. As you know, I don't just do books for the heck of it. If I didn't like it when I read it, it doesn't happen on air. I like this book. Strapped, Why America's 20 and 30-somethings Can't Get Ahead. I think it's a valid inquiry and an important one. Are you with us, Tamara?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
I've just mentioned the title of the book, Strapped, and your inquiry into the 20 and 30-somethings trying to survive in early 21st century America. Tamara, what motivated you to make that examination?
Well, a couple of reasons. You know, one, I think there's just a lot of frustration out there among young people, among the parents of young people, and a lot of misunderstanding about what is happening to young people today. So I wanted to write the book to provide a more thorough exploration of the economic circumstances and the public policy changes that have really resulted in it becoming much more difficult for this generation to work or educate their way into the middle class.
Well, how did you? I guess the starting point then would be identifying that there is in fact a problem. What is it that leads you to believe that 20 and 30 somethings are strapped?
Well, you know, before I actually did the research, it was just in my day job. I study economic trends and knowing, you know, the major trends that have happened in terms of the loss of our manufacturing jobs, what's happening with the cost of college and the amount of debt that students are going into. But when I really dug deeper, you know, the fact of the matter is that the challenges are coming from all directions. They're happening in the housing market. They're happening in the cost of raising a child today. They're happening with the cost of going to college and the need to go to college in a way that didn't exist a generation ago. And then finally, when you look at the paychecks of young workers today, there's been a lot of ground lost. And if you add all those things up, we begin to get, I think, a better understanding of the economic reality facing this generation.
Is it fair to say, Tamara, that what you're seeing in this generation is a manifestation of America moving backwards instead of forward?
I think that's exactly right. You know, I think what's happening is if you can really trace the trend line when we started losing ground on lots of indicators, whether that's household income, access to college education, the amount of money it takes to put a roof over your head, in the 1970s. And, you know, that happens to be at a time when we had the beginning, and now we're at the height of a major shift in this country in terms of the way we structure our society. You know, a generation ago, we basically believed in this notion that we're all in it together and that society has a shared responsibility to create opportunity. So if you work hard, we'll meet you halfway to make sure you have the means necessary to get ahead, to this notion of it's everybody for themselves. You know, we've really devolved the risk and the responsibility all onto the individual shoulders. And the unique challenges facing this generation, I think, are part of that larger story.
Well, now you talk about workers in general terms. Are you focused primarily on any particular subset, or is it working people of that generation across the board? Is it college versus high school educations? Is it high school dropouts? Does this trend manifest itself in one group more than another?
Well, the two groups, college educated and non-college educated, the real trend here is that they're moving further and further apart. In terms of your young workers with only high school degrees or maybe some college, they've lost a lot of ground compared to the previous generation. The typical 25 to 34 year old with a high school degree is making about $13,000 less than they did back in the 1970s, and that's after adjusting for inflation. And college grads have basically, their earnings are about the same as they were a generation ago. The difference is today's college grads have enormous student loan debt burden.
And that can be traced to, let's call it for what it is, Republican trends away from grants and toward propping up the loan industry. I mean,
is that right, fair? Well, we've seen a sea change in how we help students pay for college. And it used to be we gave more grants than we did loans, and grants don't have to be repaid. And now we basically we've created what I call a debt for diploma system. And, you know, not only does it really strangle young people with an average debt that today is $20,000, but it keeps a lot of really bright kids from getting the education that they could handle and that they need to compete in this economy.
And, does organized labor play into this anywhere?
Well, I think the lack of and the decline in the power of organized labor plays a big factor here, particularly in the loss of earnings for young people in jobs that don't require college education. You know, the manufacturing jobs, a generation ago, young workers had GM as the nation's largest employer, where the wage was, you know, $17, $18 an hour. They had pensions, health care benefits. Today, young people have Walmart as the largest employer in the country, where wages are $7, $8 an hour, and health care benefits are for the large part out of reach of most workers there, and pensions are a pipe dream. So absolutely, you know, the unions were responsible for helping build the middle class during the 1950s and 60s, and I think they're going to be vital to making some of these low-wage service sector jobs better-paying jobs.
Well, I look at these trends, and I don't have any issues with them, Tamara, but the thing that where or who, there is nothing good about what you suggest is happening to this generation.
In terms of their economics.
Yeah, I understand. But somewhere along the way, there's some cost-benefit analysis involved. This is benefiting someone.
Well, you know, I've been getting this question a lot about, you know, isn't it just the fact, are we cutting off access to college and making it harder for young people to go to college and become the first in their family to graduate in order to keep a really large pool of low-wage workers? Now, that may be one example, but, you know, that really cuts against the grain of the history of this country, which is we used to do a pretty good job of ensuring that anybody who wanted to go to college could afford it. And we've just been slowly retreating from that commitment to a place where now the gaps between the rich and poor in terms of who goes to college are widening, and the gaps along race and ethnicity are widening as well. And this is happening, you know, at a time where the college degree has replaced the high school diploma in terms of the basic minimum required to get a pretty good paying job in this country.
Well, my mom and dad both graduated with high school degrees in 1943 from a small high school here in West Virginia, and I have long said that they got a high school education that was probably the equivalent of the education that I got in college.
That's right, especially in terms of what it would get them in the labor market.
Yeah. So I'm at sixes and sevens to figure out why anyone in the halls of power is this negligence that this has happened, Tamara, or is it, you know, like I said, is it an intentional act?
Well, I do think it's a little bit of both. You know, at the state level, states, you know, as soon as they run into a budget issue, higher education is one of the first things on the chopping block. part of this is political. You know, young people don't have quite the political power that other demographic groups do. But it's also, you know, this is a rich nation. It's really more about our priorities. If we really think something is a priority, we will find the money to get the job done. And unfortunately, over the last three decades, investing in the common good, things that benefit everybody, you know, having good public schools, having a good higher education system, making sure anybody who wants to become a teacher can get into a four-year college and do that, you know, those have fallen by the wayside. And we have to realize we cannot have tax cuts for the wealthy and a vital opportunity society at the same time.
Now, you did mention some ethnic issues a couple of minutes ago, Tamara. Do these issues cut across ethnic lines equally, or do they fall more heavily on ethnic minorities in this country?
Well, they definitely cut across, and there's sort of shared economic pain between the college grads and the non-college grads, and between whites and African Americans. But yes, you know, we still have a very large wealth gap between Africans, Americans, and whites in this country. And in terms of the resources that parents can pass down from one generation to another. So absolutely, you know, it is more likely that a white young adult will be able to fall back on their parents. Their parents will be able to chip in more money for college and maybe help them out financially when they get out of college. So, yeah, we still do have gaps. And in terms of who goes to college, the gap in enrollment and completion along racial and ethnic lines is growing at this point.
Now, you talk in terms of this generation having trouble getting ahead. Can you share with us some particular manifestations of that difficulty? I mean, what is it that's happening to them? On a personal level, I mean, is this all about having to live in mom and dad's basement, or is it the difference between a BMW and a Ford?
I think a couple things are happening. One, young people are moving back home for longer periods of time. They are paying a lot more in rent than the previous generation because housing costs have been rising steadily, particularly in the major metropolitan areas where the hottest job markets for college grads are still clustered. And then the other thing that's happening is this is a generation that is living in debt for a much longer time, whether that's student loan debt, credit card debt that often builds up in the early 20s as people get out and find that their starting jobs don't pay enough to pay all the bills and the student loan debt, so credit cards sort of fill in the gap for a while. And what this means is they're saving less for retirement, they're delaying home ownership, they're often delaying having children even when they're emotionally ready because they're not quite financially ready. And basically it means they're living paycheck to paycheck for a much longer time at a time compared to the previous generation when by the time they reach their 30s, they should finally be sort of getting ahead and being able to stock away some savings for an emergency and for retirement.
Well, that paycheck-to-paycheck thing is scary business because that's, in essence, saying, you know, you're 2 weeks, at any given point in time, this generation's 2 weeks away from disaster.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, just to be clear, because I'm sure some of your listeners out there are thinking, well, I'm not in that age group, but I live paycheck to paycheck. You know, we have seen a major decline in household incomes across the board in all age groups, particularly for non-college educated workers. So this squeeze in general is being felt by young people. It's being felt by their parents. And a lot of the squeeze hitting young people is trickling up to their parents. You know, you have middle-aged couples taking on second and third mortgages to help pay for these ridiculously expensive college tuitions today when they need to be ramping up their own retirement savings. So the reason I focus on young people is because this age group is when all the major decisions about your life get made, how much education to get, what you're going to do to earn a living, where and when you're going to have a family. And if you look at what's happening during this age group, it really helps us get a better handle on how good of a job we're doing in this country of living up to the American ideal of if you work hard, you're going to get ahead.
Well, what this does not speak well for the future either, then, does it?
Well, you know, the trends are getting worse in terms of if you look at some of the older tail of this age group, the people in their 30s, they graduated with, you know, when I graduated from a public university 10 years ago, the average student loan debt burden was not even close to half of what it is today, and college tuition was a lot lower. Flash forward to 10 years, and we've seen tuitions almost double after you adjust for inflation, and student loan debt is growing ever ever higher. So it is getting worse.
And you mentioned student loan debt. Of course, that's not dischargeable in bankruptcy, is it?
No, it's not. It's not dischargeable. And if you talk to any young person, or if you have student loan debts yourself, as I do, they are very good at finding you. You know, you could move 50 times, and if anybody's going to track you down, it will be the student loan folks.
I've got a friend who refers to them as the student loan secret police.
Right. Exactly. You know, and you'll hear often people who want to brush off the debt burden that faces young people getting out of college today. And they'll argue that it's not that big of a deal because defaults have gone down so much on student loans. Well, that's really because there's so much better enforcement. It is nearly impossible to completely default on your student loan debt today because they will find you and set up a way for you to pay at least something on a monthly basis.
Well, what is this? Does this impact the higher education system itself?
Well, no, you know, the higher education system is, in some ways, when you look at why tuitions have risen, there's a couple reasons. One, states have been steadily scaling back the amount that they provide for higher education, so then public universities have to make up the difference in raising tuition. But universities also have a lot of leeway here. There's much more demand for college degrees, so they can get away with pricing a little bit more than they used to, knowing that parents and students are going to do anything they can to try and get that advantage.
Well, it was a fascinating book, Tamara, and it was a fascinating topic. Do you propose any remedies?
I do. I have the whole last chapter of the book is remedies, and you know it ranges the gamut from, you know, ending the debt for diploma system, going back to, in terms of federal financial aid, a better mix between grant aid and loan aid so that we can get rid of these five-figure student loan debts and make sure that college remains affordable for young people from lower-income backgrounds, to you know, catching up with the rest of the modern world and offering things like paid leave and subsidized child care.
Is that this is a very progressive, very liberal talk show. Would you agree with me in saying that that's not something we're going to see coming out of the Republican Party anytime soon?
I think that's right, although it's going to be, you know, any major reform in this country has to be done on a bipartisan basis, so, but it's not going to be on the agenda until we have a major change in political thinking and political power in this country. So, yes, I would be inclined to agree that it's going to be the Democrats that would be more inclined to champion things that are going to benefit the common good.
What about numbers themselves, Tamara? What would it cost us, or if you know, what would it cost us to go back to more of a grant-based educational system?
You know, I think it would cost anywhere between about $21 billion and $30 billion to better.
Shoot. We spend that in Iraq every 2 weeks.
Well, that's right, and we could easily raise that money by rolling back some of the tax cuts that have happened in the last 4 years, particularly those that have benefited, you know, the top one half of 1% of earners in this country.
Who, in the end, wind up benefiting by having a more educated workforce.
That's exactly right.
Tamara, thank you very much for your time. I've very much enjoyed the conversation. Where do you go from here, do you think? Are you at work on another book?
Well, I'm tooling around with some ideas. I think I'm just going to take a break, and I just got back from my book tour, so I'm thinking.
Well, best of luck to you, and please let us know about your next project, and by all means, I hope we can help you out a little bit and move a few books.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Take care, Tamara.
Bye.
Bye now. What a wonderful conversation. Tamara Drought, strapped. why America's 20 and 30-somethings can't get ahead. And, well, as she said, you know, it's not just 20 and 30-somethings. It's 40-somethings, 50-somethings, 60-somethings. Who have been the victims of a constant onslaught over the course of the last 30 years of just hateful Republican politics. That's where this comes from. Oh, well, you know, we can't afford college grants. No, that needs to be loans because, you know, we got banker buddies and they gave me a big bag of money the other day. And that's where we are. Our friend David in, we'll go to the phones here just in a second. If you go by WhiteRoseSociety.org, there is a link there where you can go to booksellers. Powell's is linked there, I believe, as is a couple of others. If you're interested in ordering the book, go there to do your ordering because our good friend Ben Birch gets a little bit of a commission on the sale. So you can do two good things at one time, and it's a very, very readable book. It's full of fascinating information, stuff that you don't necessarily sit around and think about. But once you're a couple of chapters in, you're wondering why you weren't sitting around thinking about this. We've got a laundry list to make of crap that needs to be fixed. I mean, America right now is, it's like when the real estate agent tells you, oh, you're going to love this. It's a cute little fixer-upper. And you get in there and you realize it's a cute little burner downer. We got a bunch because there's so much to be fixed. And, you know, it's all... I'm not complaining, but it turns out it's always our job. Republicans come in and screw everything up that they touch. They've got, like, the caca equivalent of the Midas touch. Everything they touch just turns to crap. And then, a Franklin Roosevelt has to come in and clean it up. Or a Bill Clinton has to come in and clean up 12 years of Reagan and Bush. And then as quick as he's gotten that done, another Bush comes along and turns everything to crap again. That's about where we are. Let's go to the phones. Like I said, our good friend David from Maine is with us. Hey, David, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. Thank you for waiting.
That was a good guest you had. I hope I don't hear the music anytime soon.
No. No music.
All right. I guess I'm just going to talk about the issue at hand today, which is the Washington Post article, and it got me thinking, Bob. Everybody says you need to march in the streets, and everybody needs to get up. But see, the problem with that, Bob, is, mm-hmm. is that the only time they show marches is if Mexicans are out there. If a lot of white people, middle class or in lower class white people are out there, and I guess black people to a degree, it just depends on the political angle that they're shooting for. Then if it helps support the corporate image, they'll put it on there. But they won't, because if you look back to all the protests, you have to go searching on the internet and look at the shots and look at all the people in the streets and whatnot. It's pretty damaging stuff.
Yeah.
So that got me thinking, and I said, you know, if the Congress, we're just going to get our messages handed post-it notes, they're going to be thrown in the circular file. I had an idea, and if people aren't going to call us a suppression of media, I had this idea. What if we directly circumvented all of that by going right directly to the military officials that are going to be in charge of this war, that are scared out of their mind that we are going to nuke Iran. We have to, like in the Old West, head them off at the pass and try to prevent something. So what I was thinking was of this, Bob. Now you tell me if you think this is an interesting idea.
Okay.
What we do is we take a huge postcard and whatnot, and we get everybody on head on to contribute, and we write it up how we want it to sound, and it's kind of like our letter, and on the back of it we could get it designed like the American flag, and it could be upside down or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes in the mail, they'll see this huge American flag. and the great thing about it, Bob, is that it's a huge postcard, so they won't be like, oh, this is anthrax, we got to get this sorted out or whatnot. I mean, it's just there. All the writing is there and everything, so when it goes to the military officials, they'll be like, what the heck is this? I mean, it won't just sit on the table, it'll stand out. It'll be this huge card, and we send it to the generals and the military officials in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Or the head person there that that has put some effort into trying to stop this or prevent it or somehow. And I think that's one way we could do that.
Well, I mean, are you talking about physically a giant postcard?
Yeah.
Doesn't the Postal Service have limitations on sizes?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I've seen some of these before, and I think we just have to ship it.
Well, what do you mean by giant, David?
I don't know. Maybe a person size.
I mean, you know, 11.5 by 14. Yeah, sure. That kind of stuff goes through the mail.
I don't know, something that really gets the attention. The whole idea is this, is like the colors and whatnot and the attractive. I noticed a lot of people send letters and whatnot, and it's a lot of the times when people send letters, they need to understand something, that these things can get swept under the rug because they don't stand out. They look like junk mail, or they just get passed on, and because they're looking at the other stuff. So this is why I decided to come to something like this. I was thinking...
And you're talking about sending it to active high brass in the military?
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand some of that.
The only reason I'm saying this, Bob, is because we're at an urgency level right now. And Congress, obviously, is too afraid to do anything. They're too afraid to get smeared. They're too afraid. Everybody's afraid to lose their jobs. Everybody's afraid to get arrested. Who knows what they're afraid of? And the Senate is the same thing. So we have, like I said, we got to head them off at the pass, and that's just one way. I don't know. Maybe people can add on to it, but this is what I think we need to do, Bob. We need to create a dialogue with the military officials and the people that want to talk directly to us and how we feel, not just talking to some senators and some congressmen, some people who honestly want to hear about the situation. Somebody sitting in a room going, God, I wish somebody would communicate with me on some level of what they're feeling about this or something like that.
Well, that makes a lot of that makes sense, David. You know, I was thinking in terms of somehow or another letting the military know that, you know, we support them if they take Nuremberg seriously, for instance. Yeah, I mean, do you see what I'm getting at there?
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to specifically reach a targeted audience,
right?
Or a targeted group,
right? And I'm thinking like a marketer.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's a reason that we're behind the curve on our side of this fight, and that is largely because we haven't thought that way. You know, I've railed and raged about the ignorance of the Democrats in ignoring talk radio for 20 years.
Well, Bob, I mean, it all comes down to marketing and how your concept and how you stand out. And if somebody sent a letter, and this is why I really wish people would understand this. If somebody sent a letter that was something something that you could obviously tell from that huge pile, people are going to want to look at it. And
well, you know,
read it.
For that matter, I mean, 8x10 at this point might get that job.
8x10 might, but I think a good idea is to color it. I'm going to play the GOP game because what do I have to lose? I'll color it red and white and blue.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. It's not a matter of not having anything to lose. It's a matter of that's my flag, too. That's your flag.
Right.
You know, and I'm tired of these SOBs wrapping themselves in it, David. So, you know, no, don't feel like it's an act of desperation or anything. There's a lot in what you say that's damn smart. Now, on the other hand, you know, what you say about people in the streets and the way it gets covered, there's a hell of a lot of truth in that, too. And I think that these immigrant marches are covered the way they are because fear sells.
That's right. Fear does sell.
You know, there's an old saying in journalism, especially TV journalism, if it bleeds, it leads.
But, Bob, you know they would never cover the Million Man March like that.
I know, and I understand what you're saying. You know, yeah. I don't know if there were enough people marching that the journalism elite somehow felt scared of them. You know, oh, look at the rabble! You know, the hoi polloi is out.
Right.
You might see a response in that regard. But I understand. You know, I understand what you're saying about no coverage.
I have to tell people they have to understand that. A lot of people, they'll show up to the marches and whatnot, and a lot of people do come out in the streets, and a lot of times we fall for it, like, oh, people aren't coming out to the streets. You know what? People are coming out to the streets in these marches.
And I know the way they cover it. I remember it very well. You know, on the one hand, you got 200,000 people, and they'll, you know, and in the name of giving balanced coverage, they'll say, a group of people came out opposed to the war. Another group opposed them. And they'll interview one guy from one side and, you know, some mouth-breathing strychnine drinker from the right wing. Yeah, we want some more war.
Also, on the other
and
side.
And call it balanced coverage when there's nothing balanced about it.
Also, on the other side, Bob, what they do for the Republicans, because they don't have the kind of numbers that the progressives and the liberals have when these protests, when we decide to protest, in great numbers, like the Iraq War, what they'll do is they'll just do convenient camera angles and digital loops.
Well, sure they can. I mean, I remember the best example of that was the toppling of the statue in Baghdad. Damn, it looked like a Super Bowl crowd the way the mainstream media presented it, and it wasn't. That crowd was not that big.
And remember when the president was giving a speech to the was giving a speech to some of the troops, and they had some of the same troops in the same line of vision.
Oh, absolutely. And well, you know, the USS Abraham Lincoln, and God knows how much it actually costs to turn a nuclear aircraft carrier, Nimitz-class carrier. God only knows how much it costs to turn that thing around. But they had to turn the Abraham Lincoln all the way around so that you wouldn't, you know, so that it would look like that, you know, George Bush has gone to sea, and, you know, so that you wouldn't see San Diego in the background. Sure. What you're getting at, David, is the fact that there is collusion between the Bush administration and the mainstream media. And, you know, I hope that most of America is figuring that out. I mean, there's always going to be that hardcore, weird little cancerous knot of Bush supporters. No, it's a liberal media. There's no liberal media. There's the conservative media. You know, the White House's memos came out last week between the White House and Viacom, and, you know, it was the Bush people telling Viacom, owner of CBS, how to do the news.
It's getting to that point where everybody just has to start being critical thinking, and then thinking to yourself, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, well, there are places you got to get away from the TV,
and also for the progressives, and I hope people understand this. We need some like Richard Branson-esque type thinking for our marketing and promotion.
Well, we're trying to do some of that here, David.
I understand.
Because if no one else will. No one else will. I mean, you know, look, I just called up, this is a classic example of it. Now, Condoleezza Rice said today.
Yeah.
Okay, here is the front page of CNN. Bravery and fear of Flight 93. Congressman accused of using staff to babysit. Air raid targets compound on Pakistani-Afghan border. Story number 4, Rice, we can't let this continue. Soldiers details for sale in Afghan shops. June Pointer, youngest Pointer sister dies.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
You know, and it's on and on and on. It's the Oakland, California of journalism. What Gertrude Stein said about it. You know, there's no there. There's no news.
You know, Bob, my theory on that is quite simply that none of these people have ever had to be a coverage in a major crisis or a war other than 9/11, and they weren't around for Vietnam, so they really think that this is like an event that's going to boost ratings and it's going to be like an Iraq-type situation where they really don't understand the situation in Iraq. They don't look at the pictures. They don't watch the documentaries. They don't look at the articles. So once again, we're in a situation where these people, since they've never experienced that, we're at a hindrance as a population.
Yeah, we certainly are. But you got to understand where the coming war in Iran is concerned.
Yeah.
The media is already psyched up for it.
I know. That is the scary thing.
Because especially TV media, it'll be it'll be the shock and awe thing again. It'll be the same thing from the 1991 war. I can't even remember the guy's name anymore, but he was embedded and he had a camera phone for CNN. He was riding with like the 3rd Cavalry or something, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and he says, I'm having a blast. This is the most fun I've ever had. They were out there killing people. And here's a guy who calls himself a journalist talking about how much fun he's having.
Do you think anyone's going to grab a conscience like Mr. Bill Clinton or anything and just decide to say something before an attack hits?
No. No, you're not gonna get it from the so-called mainstream.
Yeah,
Dennis Kucinich will be there. The 30-something Democrats will probably be there. Your Joe Bidens, your Joe Liebermans, your Ben Nelson, you know, all those Dinos, the mugwumps will be sitting there, well, you know, I disagree right now, but when the war starts, I got to support my president.
I completely understand that. You know, Bob, I keep getting this vision of if everything does go to hell, God forbid, on Earth, I keep getting this vision of aliens coming down and saying, "Greetings, Earthling. We hope you have read our manual, Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth Manual. We hope you understand that there were just parables in there."
No, I know. You know,
and then all of a sudden the dialects come out and say, "And for the people that didn't follow the rules exactly, exterminate."
Yeah, I keep hoping it. You know, I'd like to see that day the Earth stood still kind of thing where they come down, what Klaatu or whatever it was, and you know, stop, do not bomb me. Yeah. But that's not exactly a happy movie for me to refer to because it didn't end in the best of all possible circumstances.
Well, somehow I think the universe and the extraterrestrials who are out there, I think they're more of the kin to the Douglas Adams universe. I hope, at least.
Well, it would be nice to have a little laugh somewhere along the way. You know, so long and thanks for all the fish. And by the way, it's 42.
Yeah, but it's 42. That's right.
David, thank you so much.
No problem.
Have
Bob.
A great evening.
Later.
Bye now. And let's keep this rolling on. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
What's going on?
Not a lot. I read your column today.
You made my day, brother.
This is Ed, columnist of Inside Ed's Head, a periodic column at our good the website of our very dear friends, WD40.com, WBYA, the letter D, 40.com. I have to do that every time I say it, Ed, because invariably I get these emails about, I tried to go there, and I got to the site about the spray lubricant.
Well, you're going to have to kind of bear with me, because I'm in the middle of cooking supper right now.
Oh, darn the luck, I'm sorry.
And my wife is, she's just getting ready to get home from work, and I got to finish up dinner.
Well, I'll tell you what, then call us back a little bit later, would you?
Well, no, I can talk.
Oh, okay, that's fine then. So,
I'm going to be busy while I'm doing it.
That's okay. I love the sound of dinner cooking.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah. What's for supper?
We're having Iowa pork chops and twice baked potatoes and stuffed mushrooms.
Oh, man.
I'm a cook, brother.
Yes, you are.
So.
We're going to have to swap some recipes.
Yes, we are. I got some good ones. Where's Agnes tonight?
Various and sundry things. She had an automotive crisis to deal with our eldest, and then there was a baseball practice thing, and then there was dinner to do. She did dinner, and so she'll be in here probably in the next hour.
Man, I know how that goes.
Yeah.
Anyway, apparently you might have liked my column.
Oh, I did. I very much did.
Well, I think I got it all wrong.
Did you?
Yes, I did. And the reason being, we're building the wall in the wrong place.
Okay.
We need to build the wall. Okay, you got to look at it from the same angle I do.
All right.
We need to build the wall between the United States and Canada, because as soon as
That's okay, it's gone now.
Kids are going to be blazing for Canada, and they need to stop them.
I understand that. But, well, you know, hey, two walls.
I'm sorry. I
No, that's okay. No, two walls. I mean, why not? The sad thing is, if one's good, I mean, you talk to these right wing freaks, two ought to be even better.
Well,
and you know, let's extend a big concrete barrier outside the American territorial waters and build a moat.
Well, I don't know. I think if things keep going the way they are, it's not going to matter. Because times are not looking good for us.
I'm scared to death, Ed. I am. I mean, this is not radio shtick. I am terrified of what's coming at us. And what's more, you get that really fun sensation of like when you watch your loved one going into surgery and you know that you're absolutely powerless at that point in time.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's where I don't know what to do to stop this. I mean, this is pure, absolute, unmitigated insanity that we're dealing with right now.
And I hear a lot of people talking about, oh, yeah, the Democrats are going to take over in November. I'm not so certain.
Well, I've got to maintain a level of optimism on that one. Things are so rotten in Washington. I think the American people are getting ready for a change. The temporary election or whatever you want to call it that went down in San Diego yesterday, with the Democratic candidate winning handily.
Oh, I didn't read anything.
That is cause for hope.
Geez, I hope so, but. I'm a member of the UFCW.
Okay, yeah, United Food and Commercial Workers.
Right, and we got a lot of hardcore Republicans in the UFCW that I work with. And every one of them are still backing this moron to the end. I mean, I haven't heard one convert, and I talk a lot of this stuff to these people. But I haven't heard one convert the whole time. I'm beginning to wonder if it's got to be something in the water or something. I don't know.
Well, you wonder, but the fact that it's not just you there in the UFCW, Ed. It's I was talking to a guy, member of another significant union who had come to the house to do some work, and he said, you know, our shop is just chock-a-block full of right-wing freaks who think that Rush Limbaugh speaks the truth and Michael Savage is his prophet.
Well,
you know, but it'll catch up with him. I mean, I don't understand how a mind works that does that. I honestly don't, because there's no brotherhood in the Republican Party. There's no sense of common purpose or common goals. I don't know how you could be a part of there's always going to be people in organized labor who are there for everything that organized labor can give them, and they will suck it dry.
And that's exactly what these guys are. That's exactly what these guys are, but they're there.
Oh, yeah.
And I live in a Republican stronghold, so I expect that because I'm sure their fathers were that way. And that, to me, is not such a bad thing, because back when their fathers were Republicans, Republicans had a different idea.
Well, you could disagree with them, but you felt like you were talking to somebody who loved America, too.
You know, my grandfather was a hardcore Republican, and but he wasn't despicable.
Well, and that's what these people are.
I'll say that.
Yeah, they're despicable. And the other side of that coin, too, Ed, is the fact that your grandfather would not recognize what passes for the Republican Party. For God's sakes, Barry Goldwater would be chased out of this Republican Party as some sort of a bedwetting knee-jerk liberal.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, that's where they've taken this is it's not even a political party anymore. It's a clique. It's a cabal. It's just nasty.
Now, I was listening to Ed. I got satellite radio on my pickup, and I was listening to Ed Schultz on the way, and they were talking about how some of these, we'll call them immigrants, were fired in Michigan because they didn't show up for work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where I live, we have a Tyson plant about 30 miles away, and Tyson shut the plant down to encourage everybody to come.
Oh, wow.
And the reason for that is, it's obvious, isn't it, that big business wants them here.
Sure.
The government wants them here, because if they didn't, they would have stopped it a long time ago.
Sure.
But there's a few guys in the Republican Party that are in the middle of dogfights to keep their seats, and they get to stand up and say, let's put a stop to these people right now.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Ed, I got to hit the news.
So, all right, well, it's good to talk to you, Bob.
Good talking to you, Ed.
I appreciate your comments on my column.
Oh, it was a pleasure, and I hope other people will go and read it, because it was a fun read, and it's always good to see someone who can approach things with a sense of humor, because we desperately need a sense of humor in this nation right now.
Well, if we can't laugh, we can't do much else anymore, can we?
Yeah, and you know, there's no glory in sitting around bawling.
All right, well, good talking to you.
All right.
I hope Agnes gets everything worked out.
I do, too.
And Agnes, we love her.
I sure will. And bon appetit. That sounds like a dandy supper.
Oh, it's getting ready to go on right now.
All right, bye now, Ed.
Thanks, bud.
Later. And it's time now for the news. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Who's lying, the expert or the State Department? The U.S. State Department said today that Iran could produce a nuclear bomb within 16 days, which is, according to Hans Blix, the former U.N. weapons inspector, impossible. In a statement made April 3rd, Blix said it would take 5 years for Iran to enrich enough uranium to create a nuke. Scott Ritter, former weapons inspector, has also said that Iran has a small amount of weapons-grade uranium to enrich, supplied by China. He further says that domestic supplies of uranium within Iran are not pure enough to create weapons-grade nuclear material. Ever the queen of rhetoric, Condoleezza Rice said today that, quote, it is time for action, unquote, on international demands for Iran to stop uranium enrichment. British and foreign ministers shared her assertion. A car bomb went off in Iraq today, killing 26 human beings and wounding 7 more. The bomb, which was detonated in a Shiite town north of Baghdad, was targeting a Shiite mosque. No word from the U.S. about possible ties to the ongoing Iraqi civil war. Meanwhile, the U.S. has lost more than 2,359 soldiers in Bush's war. In a shift from recent legislation, GOP leaders are backing away from making undocumented immigration a felony. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is now blaming Democrats for wanting to retain the felony provision, which has some lawmakers backpedaling. The undocumented immigrants to the U.S. have staged massive protests demanding their ability to be U.S. citizens. The White House lashed out at reporters today for reporting the facts. Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, scolded the White House press corps for reporting on the story that Bush knew that trailers he said were being used to manufacture biological weapons were not, in fact, being used for that, and that Bush knew this when he said it. The report in question, which refuted the president's assertion that the trailers were WMD-related, was given to the president days before he did, in fact, say that the trailers were WMD-related. In Santa Cruz, California today, military recruiters were blocked from gaining access to a University of California building where a job fair was being held. A student-led group, Students Against War, apparently kept the recruiters from entering the building. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Over 15,000 people are ill from the events of 9/11. WTC cough, an ailment that apparently has created bad health for people who were near the World Trade Center that fateful day, has been on the increase since 2001. A number of formerly healthy, non-smoking people are now symptomatic with this illness. In an ironic turnabout, St. Bernard Parish in Louisiana is thinking of hiring the consulting firm of Michael Heck of a Job Brownie Brown to help them negotiate the maze of federal bureaucracy that has followed since the Hurricane Katrina tragedy. Brown is expected to pitch his firm to the parish to a near-capacity crowd. In a story reminiscent of the Twilight Zone, a town in California which has not held municipal elections in 20 years is thrust into the national spotlight. When it finally held elections and the clerk, who was responsible for counting the votes, has refused. The town has had four mayors in its 100-year history, all relatives of the town's founders. Nearly all the houses in the town are owned by the town itself. The established political order was upset earlier this year when three new residents filed for seats on the town council. One of them, Don Huff, was followed, had his electricity cut off, and was eventually evicted, he says, for standing up for a seat at the town council. Lawsuits have been filed to figure out who indeed can lead Vernon, California, for the near future. Silvio Berlusconi is not willing to cede his prime minister's seat in Italy. Berlusconi believes that spoiled ballots may contain a victory for him. His opposition, Romano Prodi, feels secure in his election and is moving forward with cabinet talks later this week. Over 234,000 seals were expected to be killed today in Canada. The contentious seal hunt is a government-sanctioned and is done to, quote, cull the seal population, unquote. The Canadian government says there are 6 million baby harp seals in existence. No word on why exactly these animals are a threat to humankind. Alaska, known for its open spaces and liberal privacy laws, is taking a step toward more governmental intrusion into personal privacy. Alaska's Governor Frank Murkowski is advocating the recriminalization of the private possession of marijuana. Presently, a person can have up to 4 ounces in his or her private home legally. For the Head On Radio Network, my name is Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, let's do another hour. It's Wednesday night, and of course, your phone calls are always welcome at 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. And there is now at the archive page of WhiteRoseSociety.org, in other words, WhiteRoseSociety.org/Kincaid.html. There is a direct link to Strapped by Tamara Drought, and I think you will enjoy it. It'll link you straight to the purchase of the book. Appreciate Ben doing that. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Jim is joining us from Beckley. Hey, Jim, you're Head On.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
Doing pretty well, I think.
Well, it seems like things are looking kind of dicey out there, don't they?
Dicey, to say the least.
Well, listen, for your listener in Maine, the zip code for defense at Pentagon is 20301. That's 20301. And I wish him good luck, but anything sent like that would be DOA, I can tell you that right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. May as well forget it.
Why is that?
I wouldn't, because it would go right to the incinerator.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. They don't take stuff like that, Kyle. I mean, I worked in that building. I know what they do there.
So,
for stuff like
so
that.
A citizen attempting to contact his defense department?
No, I'm afraid not. I mean, I'm not trying to throw rocks at the young man's idea. I'm not, but I'm just being realistic. I mean, you know, you have to go through channels. The military is built that way. Unfortunately, they don't take fan mail or other kinds either. You know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, they don't need people out there armchair generally.
Well, it's not that. It's just a matter of their procedures. If you want to get through these people, then you have to go through certain channels, and you have to know somebody and somebody on the Hill, and they'd have to go through the Office of Congressional Legislative Liaison to try to have any kind of contact. That's what you'd have to do. Those are your mechanics, really.
I'm not surprised.
Well, I mean, that's the way it's always been. I mean, and, you know, they just don't take letters like that off the street. and they would just burn it as soon as they saw it, unfortunately. What can I say, my friend? It's like my good old friend La Rochefoucauld once said. He said this: it appears that nature, which has so wisely disposed the parts of our body to keep us happy, has also endowed us with pride to spare us the pain of knowing our imperfections.
Do that again.
It appears that nature, which has so wisely disposed the parts of our body to keep us happy, has also endowed us with pride to spare us the pain of knowing our imperfections.
We're kind of smack dab in the middle of that, aren't we?
I think we're kind of close to it, right on the bullseye.
God almighty.
Yeah, well, you know.
So, you know, I mean, 16 days till Iran can build a nuclear bomb?
Well, let's just put it this way. My predictions are, and I have a little, I don't know, I've got some skinny on this, but they're going to have us at war with those people in Iran before 15 May 2006.
You don't think they'll hold out for the really, really...
They want to get everybody worked up and scared like they did with Iraq. In other words, there's a method of the madness here.
No, I understand that, but why not hold out for 666?
They're using this thing, and that idiot Rice is saying all this crazy stuff because they're trying to get people worked up and saying, you know, well, we're in a war now with Iran, and we can't change horses in the middle of the stream. We better maintain the current leadership. That's what they're doing, I guarantee you.
And somehow the Republicans think that this will generate, will keep them in power in the 06 off-year elections?
Yes, sir. I really believe that. Now, I might be wrong.
Are the American people stupid enough to fall for it, Jim?
Sure they are. Absolutely.
Yeah, see, I love it. I love it when you get all happy on me.
Well, I'll tell you something funny that happened to me the other day.
Okay.
I'm going to do not call this, but this lady called and said, "Good evening, sir. How are you?" And I said, "May I help you?" And she says, "Mr. Ta-da." And mm-hmm. I said, "Yes." He said, "You have won a valuable prize."
Oh, dear.
And I said, "Really?" And she said, "But the only thing that you have to do to earn this valuable prize," and the way she was enunciating it was almost painful to the ear, "is to answer a simple question." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And she said, "What is an everyday household seasoning that is commonly used with pepper that is white and granular?"
Granular?
Uh-huh. And I said, "Granular?" She said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, let me think." And I went, I found my cigarettes, and I lit up a cigarette, and I made a drink because it was after 5. The yard was over, the sun was over the yard arm, and I just said, "I don't know." "You don't know?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I don't." She said, "I is authorized to provide you with a hint. Now, what I want you to do is to go into your kitchen and look for this substance. It is in a blue, round container with a young lady with an umbrella, and it has on the logo, when it rains, it pours." And I said, "Okay."
Had another cigarette, poured another drink.
You know, I figured, well, you know, I'll fire up another. This was a while back. This was back in the 80s, so I fired up a joint. And then I said, you know, this has got to be good. So I fired up a joint, and I'd roll it anyway. So I said, "Okay, fine." And I went to the bathroom, and I fed the cats, and did something else, you know, and came back. And I just said, "You know, ma'am, I just don't know." And she said, "You are one dumb son of a bitch," and hung up the phone.
Oh, you know, soap? And you never found out what the valuable prize was. Jim,
no,
what
didn't.
Were you thinking?
I didn't. I think it was some kind of one of those coupon books where you can get coupons that give you a discount like at the Acme Poodle Parlor or something
mm-hmm.
like that. And, you know, I just love to play with these telemarketer people. I mean, if I had the time and if I'm in the right head to do it. And I can tell you one more story that might make you laugh.
Go right ahead. I need
a laugh. I have a CD that's entitled Pull My Finger, and it is basically a contest of people making noises with their body. We will call them eructations.
Yes.
And so, when I first played this thing, I didn't realize that people like Lord Foghole, he's one of the participants in a contest, could do such things. I mean, I had no idea that the human body could make these sounds. My God. And so this woman called up, and she started to give me her spiel about this, that, and the other, and I had the CD in the carousel, and I just hit play. And I said, yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And she could hear these noises in the background. And she said, sir, sir. I said, yeah. She said, I think you need to take care of some personal business. And I said, ma'am, she said, sir, listen, I'm going to let you go now because you need to take care of some personal business. And I could hear before she rang off, say to somebody next to her, I ain't call that man no more. He nasty.
Oh, they're just out there trying to make a living, Jim.
I know it, but I wouldn't rude to her.
No.
I just had this thing. I mean, it sounded like...
Hey, you know what? You made her life. You didn't make her day. You made her life. She will sit around at Thanksgivings for years to come. Did I tell you about the crazy man I called one day? You made her life, man.
But this CD, I mean, honestly and truly, it's just amazing. Well, you know, not to dwell too further on eructations, but there's a book called Hitler's Pope, and it's about Pius XII.
Mm-hmm.
When he died, they did not embalm him properly. And apparently there was a lot of gas in the abdominal cavity. And they said that the sounds coming out of that casket were such that the choir couldn't even drown them out, and two papal Swiss guards fainted.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that had. You know, there's a great short story by Mark Twain. I'm trying. No, it wasn't cannibalism. It's the invalid story.
Yeah,
the invalid story, and it concerns a man who was called upon to escort the body of his dear friend back home for burial. And of course, there's a twist in it. It turns out the wrong box gets on the wrong train, but it's winter and it's very cold,
mm-hmm.
and there is also a container of Limburger cheese.
Oh my God!
And the story centers on the conversation between the fellow who's accompanying what he thinks is his friend, and the
Limburger cheese,
and the conductor sitting back there in the caboose, where they, you know, they all are, and the windows are shut and everything. And it's funny because the conductor keeps referring to the dearly departed as he starts out, you know, the lieutenant calls him the colonel. Pretty soon he's up to calling the admiral's pretty strong, getting pretty strong, isn't he? The guy ends up wrecking his health from hanging his head out the window of the moving train in the middle of the winter. It's hilarious.
No, I think I've heard of that. You know, I remember there were guys at Citadel who used to put Limburger cheese on people's radiator.
Oh, that's just evil.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, they taught you. Listen, if you want to go to a place that will teach you, I call it the school of nasty tricks.
Mm-hmm.
That's postgraduate work in that place.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all.
I mean, yeah, you get a bunch of guys like that together, and you can imagine in a military setting what they love to do.
No, I read the book.
They're confined in the barracks and stuff like, oh, yeah, well, you've read the Lords of
Discipline. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, you're right, absolutely. But, you know, going back to more serious topics, I mean, this thing with Iran is designed to influence the 2006 elections. And, you know, that's the reason they're beating the drum again.
But is it just the saber rattling for voting purposes, or will they start the bombing?
Oh, we'll definitely start the bombing.
I mean, I wonder if some of the nuclear stuff is a con, Jim, to sort of get America to meet Bush halfway and say, well, okay, you can bomb Iran as long as you're not using nukes.
I think it probably, I don't know if it's, I don't know. I think if he says that he's going to use nuclear weapons and he's got a nuclear option on the table as he's placed it, and there's a 50-50 chance that he will use them.
I don't like the thoughts of that at all.
I believe there is a 50, it's at least 50-50. And I'm just going to go either he will or he won't. And I personally, and I may be wrong, and I hope that I am, God knows I do. But I believe that he's just stupid enough, and he has some people in there that are stupid enough to support him doing it. I mean, but, you know, look at today now. Four generals have asked for Rumsfeld's resignation. Four former generals. These guys are retired, and they're out of the loop, okay?
Yeah.
And apparently, Rumsfeld is the disposition that, you know, if you're in the senior leadership and you oppose him, your career is ruined.
You're cashiered.
Well, you're retired.
Yeah.
Okay, depending on this, that, and the other. And, you know, you're not exactly leaving under the best circumstances, and that's the reason these guys are saying after the fact, But now that you have people who are coming out in opposition to this man, because he has an extremely strong and assertive personality, and he will not take suggestions very wisely or easily. I mean, once he makes up his mind, he is a very dangerous, bullheaded individual.
And you know, learned that over a long course of conduct. I mean, for God's sakes, he.
Well, I mean, look at his employment history.
Well, that was what I was going to say. You know, anybody who makes his bones in the Nixon administration, you know, he's suspect. I'm sorry, that's tainted goods.
Well, he was Ford's chief of staff too, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, he's not the kind of person who he has an ego the size of the Ronald Reagan Federal Building, over on Federal Triangle. Okay, that's how big it is, and that's the second largest building in Washington.
Yeah, and he thinks he's the smartest guy in town.
He does, and he basically treats subordinates. You know, he's very, he's very condescending toward subordinates, and you know, he has the whip hand because he has the carte blanche of the White House. And they're scared to death of him. And he'll basically get his way. I mean, stupidity in with people like that always has a habit of getting its way, unfortunately.
Well, the sad thing is it could very well get a whole bunch of people killed. And I'm not talking about just as if there's such a thing as just an Iranian.
Oh, I know. This thing is, you know, and it will not be contained locally. You just can't do something like that.
Well, what are India and, I mean, assuming the nuclear option, what are India and Pakistan going to do when the radioactive clouds go over their country?
They're not going to be very happy.
That's tantamount to a nuclear attack on them.
Well, yeah, they're not going to be very happy about that, as a matter of fact. I mean, you know, we'll have it over here. I mean, we certainly will. Because that's one of the things that Harrison Salisbury pointed out in his book, War Between Russia and China, published in 1969, is that it would take about 3 or 4 weeks for the radioactive fallout to reach the continental United States.
Well, we are...
And, you know, people will say, oh, it would be great if those two giants would knock each other out. But the trouble is, you know, if that stuff were whirled up in the Gobi Desert and parts of wherever, you know.
Oh, I know.
And basically the heartland, you know.
I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you do too, Jim, I remember way, way back when Ronald Reagan was sitting down to do his weekly radio address and didn't know that the microphone was open.
Stop bombing Russia in 5 minutes.
Well, I've declared the Soviet Union to be illegal. The bombs begin falling in 5 minutes.
That was terrifying.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't think it could get much scarier. You know, Cuban Missile Crisis, that.
People are just as stupid as Reagan then, man,
and
now.
Now it's even worse.
I mean, you know, I guess Reagan, they say, could be considered by some people to be kind of a decent guy who'd give you the shirt off his back. I don't know if that's true. That's what I've heard said about him, even by some of his enemies. But, I mean, this crowd that's up there now, I mean, they are completely without any type of restraint or any sense of virtue that I can ascertain. I'm sorry.
Well, no need to apologize.
But, I mean, they have no sense of restraint, no sense of virtue, no real moral compass.
No love for this nation.
Except for their own, what they consider to be their own careers and their own, you know, sense of well-being, financial and otherwise, and those of a few of their Confederates. And that's just about it. That's the way I look at them.
Well, I tell you what, you said a mouthful when you said Confederates, Jim.
Well, that's exactly what I guess it's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's the Confederacy of dunces.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hope that you guys have a good program tonight and that the thunderstorms will hold off and that God will remain in his heaven, and let's hope that all will continue to be right with the world. A little blue sphere.
I hope so, because it's a nervous Nelly kind of time right now.
I cleaned off my patio for spring this afternoon, and I said, well, you know, this may be the last spring I'll see. I don't know. And, you know, when it comes to this type of thing, you have two schools of thought. You have the people who are survivalists, and you have the desolationists. And I belong to the latter camp.
Mm-hmm.
I am a desolationist because I know exactly how this thing is going to play out when they start.
Yeah, you know,
And people,
I want to be wrong, Jim. I want you to be wrong.
Expecting, you know, some very strange apocalyptic events between now and I'd say 15 May.
Well, I had him pegged for doing this a little bit later. You know, I had him. You know, what was the phrase? You don't roll out a new product in August. In explaining the Iraq War resolution in October of 2002?
Well, May is in August, and November would be too late.
Yeah. No, I know November would be too late, but, you know, really get the frenzy going in September, October? Oh, that'd
well,
be good.
I think they'd probably need some time to justify what they're doing and really, 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 I mean, they could even in that time, because of the exigencies of the conflict, cancel the election.
Well, they've got that plan out there, too. We talked about that a couple of years ago. They floated that you know, a national emergency would negate the election.
And that would take time.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, there are a number of scenarios, but I'll tell you, it'll be sooner than later because they are beating the drums faster and faster every day. The rhetoric is getting stronger, and it's not cooling down. Instead of cooling down, it's heating up.
It does seem to be. Jim, thanks so much.
Good night, sir.
Have a wonderful evening.
And the same to you and all your listeners.
Okay. Bye now. I'll tell you what. You know, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm afraid. When you've got a guy running around with a gun in his hands, who has no business having a gun, and, you know, the people. Fear is a normal and a rational response. And that is the situation we have. It is becoming more and more apparent that George Bush has gone stark, raving, really, you know, mad. Anyone in a position of power in the United States who would ever even remotely consider the possibility of a first nuclear strike is just sprayed roach crazy. And that is where we are. Because, you know what? This stuff would not be coming out if it was not true. Because, and, you know, they came out and they tried to slime Seymour Hersh. And, what was it, Richard Armitage came out and slimed him a day or so ago. But the fact of the matter is, I don't have to rely on Seymour Hersh. I can go to the Bush administration itself, and I can read the stories from a couple of years ago where they were talking about how they needed to develop bunker-busting nuclear weapons, more and better of them. That's not Seymour Hersh. That's the Bush administration. That were willing to throw a perfectly good treaty out the window to begin developing a new generation of thermonuclear weapons. That's not Seymour Hersh, that's the Bush administration. And that is terrifying. And in our conversation earlier, it's like what happens when you watch a loved one go through the doors to surgery and you realize that at that point in time, the tiny little speck in the universe that is you is, above all things, powerless. And the question we have to answer is whether we are willing to be powerless in this process. The phone number, of course, you know, most likely, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Let's share. I'm Bob.
Yeah. Head On.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. So the Bush administration is denying that they intend to launch a surgical nuclear strike on Iran. These are, of course, the same kinds of denials we heard from them in the months preceding the war in Iraq, a war this administration had wanted since the day they strolled into office, a war they'd been actively planning even while they were denying they were doing so. I don't know what's more remarkable, that we have a government that's planning on carrying out an unprovoked nuclear strike against a country that's never attacked us, and whose internal affairs we've interfered with for more than half a century, or that no small amount of Americans will actively cheer it on. Worse, the timing of the strikes makes it seem pretty obvious that this is yet another political ploy meant to fire up the Republican base for the 2006 congressional elections. I just can't fathom the thought processes that enable people to seriously consider killing tens of thousands of people just to win an election. I just can't. You read about these things happening in history books, but somehow you never figure that it's going to happen to us. I wonder if I'll still be alive when they release the book The Rise and Fall of the American Republic. In less than 5 years, the United States has gone from being the most powerful and respected nation on earth to an international pariah whose leaders are little better than criminals in the eyes of the rest of the world. You know, it's a good thing I don't drink, but maybe it's time I started. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Coming up on 26 minutes before the hour. We're halfway through this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. I am Bob Kincaid. And let's go to the phones. Luke has been waiting. Hey, Luke, you're Head On.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just loving this story. It's like, this is one of those stories, I'll be honest, I'd put in the back of my mind this thing about the trailer.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I mean, this is one I remember, you know what I mean? I remember when it happened because that's about the time we have BBC America.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy watching BBC America because you get to see the world from another side.
Yeah, right.
And the funny part of this one was I remember when they did this thing, you know, for like the first week or so, they wouldn't let the press near the thing. You know, oh, we found this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they let the press look at it. They found the plate on it that told who built it. And the BBC went to interview these people because it's a company in England. And it had the guy who makes them. And he's sitting there looking at it and goes, I don't see anything unusual. He said, the only thing they've changed on it is that, you know, because it's in a desert environment, so they had the these grill things put up to block sand.
Mm-hmm.
But said, other than that, so that's just our standard hydrogen-making machine.
Yeah, right. Well, and what it boils down to is George Bush out of this is stone cold busted.
Well, and the thing I remember at the time also was, I remember him interviewing the guys from IAEA, and they were like, we looked at this thing a year ago. You know, we looked at this thing when Saddam had us through the first time. We knew this was there. It was nothing. I mean, yeah, that's right. He can make balloons. Oh, God, aren't we worried about
that?
Well,
yeah, and you know, Iran has a new, you know, that's what's next. I mean, they're following the same script. You know,
I've been hearing this thing, and I'm like, you know, are you sure that's in the tape from when they went into Iraq? They were just dubbing into one word.
That's and if you need to call the president of Iran Saddam, that's okay because everything else fits too.
It's like gang. Do you all not remember 2 years ago when we were talked into this idiocy? I love the thing. I was listening to Randy Rhodes this evening. She was playing the thing from when he was up at this thing at John Hopkins or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, say, she had it down to like about a 2 minute piece of tape with him talking, and it's like, dear Lord, I'd sooner listen to Harpo, Groucho, and Chico.
No, I know.
I mean, made more sense.
It did. It absolutely did.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like you just got to think somebody over on the other side that the whole bunch of them are either taking bicarb or drinking heavily.
Oh, I'm drinking heavily, dropping acid, eating ecstasy, mushrooms, you know, LSD. I don't know if you can actually abuse drugs enough to get the ordinary mind to the place where these freaks live.
Well, as I say, it's like you say, they just must be taking brown acid like saccharin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if half the time when you listen to Rumsfeld, it's the only way that you can possibly think that anything makes any sense with him. You know, when he's out there, when he was out there hallucinating the gnomes.
I tell you what, some of the times with him, it's like, say, you get that feeling like, say, that you don't know who he's channeling, but I mean, it's like, you just go out there and say every stupid thing you can, make nothing more than 3 to 4 words at a time. You know, just keep, it's like Bush, you know what I mean? Just don't say whole sentences, just link words together.
Right.
And pretend like you're talking in whole sentences. And it's like, I can't use the word we use in my group of friends.
I understand.
But it's more like mind, you know.
Yes.
Like you say enough crazy stuff, you know, they're sitting there kind of going, huh?
Yeah, mind fornication.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep, that's
the
one.
What we call it. Except we use the other adjective, but yeah. Hey. But you know what I mean? It's sort of like you're just sitting there doing something so outrageous that everybody else is just going to go, huh? and they're sitting there going, no, I couldn't.
Well, no, that's why I mentioned that little flash that I had to Jim. Luke, this idea, I mean, did that make any sense? Did you hear that?
Not all of it.
Okay, well, the idea here, we've got this, you know, we know that they would like, I mean, George Bush is a guy who literally stuffed M-80s up frogs' butts and blew them up as a child. That's the kind of, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer-esque sociopathy that is at work in his sick mind. And as a consequence of that, you know, we know that they would like to use a nuclear weapon, but Luke, if you play with it for just a minute, you realize that what they're doing here is they're getting America
the bar too high.
They've set the bar too high. They're getting America in a froth about nuking, so then they'll back off and say, look, you know, at least we didn't nuke them.
We just went there and killed a few hundred thousand of them.
Yeah, but you know, it's conventional weapons, so it's conventional death, so there's no clouds of radiation, you know, just a little depleted uranium here and there.
You know what I mean? Well, it's like that thing, you know, they keep changing the numbers. They're now down to 30,000. But I remember when, after we first went in, you know, I mean, some of the Red Cross people were saying at least 100,000 civilians.
Right.
And to this day, I'm still waiting to hear him explain why it is we bombed a restaurant. You remember one time they were trying to get Saddam and they blew a restaurant up?
Yeah, I do.
And it's like, that's a war crime. You cannot you cannot target non-military sites, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
individually. That's essentially a war crime right there.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you can blow it.
And by war crime.
Headquarters.
Yeah, and by war crime, Luke, we're not talking about something that somebody else made up. We're talking about our laws. Laws that we defined for the world in the course of trying.
That's stuff that came out of Nuremberg.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't do these things anymore. Nobody does. Anybody does, the rest of us jump on them.
Yeah.
That way no one will do it, because if somebody does it, everybody else is supposed to jump on them with boots on. You know? And we'll teach you. It's like, because when everybody else is sitting there aiming at you, it's like, well, I better not do that. You know?
Exactly. And the thing is, but you know, we're so big that we think nobody in the world will move to stop us. And it says something about the morality of this nation, Luke, that, you know, we think that we have adopted that hated old philosophy that might makes right.
Well, that's another one they keep talking about recently is, well, if the president says it's legal, it's legal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, that goes back to, that's like Louis XIV, you know, saying that the state is me.
Well, you know who I thought of that, though? You know who, the thing, the story they tell, I'm not sure exactly the whole of the story, but it's the one they tell about Tom DeLay, where he was smoking a cigar.
Yes.
And they said, put out the cigar, you know, it's a rule, it's the law that you can't smoke in this part of the restaurant. He said, I am the law, or I am the government.
Well, it's federal law. Since federal law governs D.C., he said, yeah, I am the federal government. And that's the hubris we're dealing with. That's the evil we're dealing with. So I hate to be all grim and bummed out and everything, but I'm a little pessimistic right now. Because at the very least, they're trying to you know, and we're not talking about, you know, progressives and liberals like you and me, Luke. We're going to be opposed to this war come hell or high water. But there is a segment of the American population. I mentioned a Mark Twain story a little bit ago. The best example, the best evidence of this, this American mindset that has gone on for literally generations is in the war prayer, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right?
Yep.
Okay, and he talks about, you know, all the brass bands marched in the street and every, you know, the sweethearts came out and cried and the kids looked so good in their uniforms and all America was up for the war. And in this instance, he was talking about our attempted genocide against the Filipinos. And the thing is, the Americans are all, the American people, and it shames me to say it, the American people are always up for the start of a war.
Well, the
it's
one,
the middle and the end we're not so crazy about.
The one I always remember was when we got bombed in Beirut. Well, amazingly enough, all of a sudden, well, we're attacking a little place called Grenada.
Yeah.
And it's like we're attacking an island that probably would make Hawaii look immense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. And, you know, well, there's communists in the medical school. Yeah. Please. But you know that was. But that's what you get with these paper cowboys, Luke.
It's diversion and hurry up and don't think. That's the thing I've noticed about this group is when they're doing something, it's like, well, we don't have time to think. We have to rush through. You know, I mean, get it done now. Get it now. Don't think. Keep moving.
Right.
So by the time you've thought about it, we're 10 steps down the road. Who cares? You know. And it's like now we're going back and some of them are starting to see what they've done. And going, wait, why did we do that?
Well,
because you all were sitting there going, well, that's fine with us.
Exactly, and we know, I mean, just listen for it. It's going to happen. You're going to hear some Bush freak, one of these, you know, the 20% hardcore cancerous knot people going, well, he would never use a nuclear weapon, but Iran needs a good conventional bombing. We still owe them for the embassy.
Well, you know, it's like they always want to go into the thing about the first Gulf War, and it's like, yeah, no one ever talks a whole lot about the fact that, oh, by the way, what was Kuwait doing? What do they call that? Slant drilling?
Yeah.
You know?
Stealing.
Yeah. I mean, they were stealing oil from Iraq. I mean, I'm not saying...
Because they're a teeny tiny country and they don't have much of their own. They don't have much oil of their own and they had to steal.
And I mean, you know, then we had the the ambassador's daughter coming up there. Oh, they were throwing infants out of incubators.
Yeah.
You know, that's one that to this day it's like, you know, you all fell for this. I mean, no one checked to see who the witness was. It could have been anybody, you know, somebody from Central Casting.
Yep, bunch of suckers.
So the thing right now, like you said, I figure sometime, if it doesn't happen for the summer, I figure sometime just after the 1st of October we'll do something or something will happen. So, as you know, we can't have that election now.
Well, Jim seems to think we're going to see it in May. I don't know. I'm still kind of holding out for September.
I'm thinking September the 1st of October. Any further than that, like you say, it'll look too suspicious.
Yeah, and
I'm figuring just about then we'll have a boat blow up or, you know, something. We'll have another coal incident or something along those lines.
Exactly.
You know, and it'll be somewhere probably in the Philippines or something, you know, where it could be anybody's, theoretically. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and
amazingly enough, we'll decide we know exactly who it is.
There's a whole bunch of dots out there, Luke, and it's up to us to connect them. For instance, one of the things that I'm noticing is the information provided by the criminal courts in Spain. Did you see that? The Madrid train bombings had nothing whatsoever to do with Al-Qaeda. Nothing. Not a bit. Not even a little bit.
Well, the one I'm going to watch for this next week, not that ours is not interesting, but I tell you what, the one that this next week, and I've been listening to Tom Hartman talk about this, because he has kind of it's one of his hobbies, I think, is this Berlusconi thing over in Italy.
Well, yeah, it's kind of easy to get fascinated with that freak.
Well, it's one of those things, it's like, if you just change the name, it's like, this is what Rupert Murdoch wants to be.
Yeah.
You know, have total control of all the media, so anything is heard, he's already in control of. So you're only going to hear what he wants you to hear. I mean, and then to find out this stuff about bringing in Diebold.
Mm-hmm.
And then this the group that did the purge is down in Florida. Insure or something. I can't remember what the name of the
team. Oh, yeah. Oh, doggone it. Yeah, I remember.
And the thing was, they said, essentially, the thing was, almost no, other than the bloggers, people in the country didn't know it because, of course, Berlusconi controls the media.
Yep. Well, you know, I mean, it's what did Stalin say? It's not who does the voting, it's who counts the votes.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we are.
Well, and then you go to the other thing. It's what they used to say. What is it? It's not what history is. It's who writes the history.
Yeah. Precisely.
So the next generation will only know what's been written down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a classic case of that is Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of history out there that, you know, I never knew that until I read that book, and there's nothing false in it. It's just history that we don't, you know, it's history we would prefer to forget. It's the history of what was done to Native Americans. It's the history of white slavery and African slavery and the history of every attempt to keep working people from standing up and demanding their part of the American dream.
Well, it's like when you tell most people about, wasn't it nice of them to give those Indians all those blankets?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we were practicing germ warfare.
Sure.
I mean,
you know, and George Carlin once said that the American history was like a big old football game. First down, Pennsylvania, Midwest to go.
It's like I say, we're just going to keep you all moving until you're all treading water, you know?
That's exactly how it works. Hey, Luke, thanks so much, brother.
Bye, Bob. You have a good evening.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
Bye now. So where, you know, where do you go? What do you do? I mean, at this point, I mean, this is a legitimate question. There's nothing rhetorical about this. At this point in time, when you know darn good and well that nuclear war is being plotted by the leadership of the United States, do you just ignore it? How do you live your life? I mean, at the top of the program, I was talking about, well, you know, I had to go and I had to do this, and we had to install that, and it was, you know, just the fun little frustrations of everyday life. And like I said, John Lennon's life is what happens when you make other plans. But honestly, knowing what you know, how do you get that out of your head? Is it possible to get it out of your head? There is a man in Washington, D.C., whose fondest wish is to blow up a significant portion of the world. There's a There's an underground facility at, I believe, Esfahan in Iran that, that conventional weapons couldn't reach, or so they say. There's another underground facility at Natanz in Iran, also underground, also unreachable by so-called conventional weapons technology. And then, of course, you know, the nuclear reactor site itself, where they're trying to build a nuclear plant, here's the irony of ironies, is named Bush, Bushehr. There are over 400 sites. I read somewhere that, you know, it would be the sorties necessary to do this would be in the thousands. But we're talking about military. We're talking about Air Force bases in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in Qatar. And from aboard the various and sundry aircraft carriers. We're talking about Tomahawk cruise missiles launched from destroyers and cruisers and submarines. Now, not all of it's going to be nuclear. But, again, I can't help but think that I'm being subjected to a little bit of a carnival sideshow here. Oh, this is real funny because, you know, we got them liberals all upset because we're going to nuke. And then turn around, well, you know, we didn't nuke them, so you know, it's okay. As long as we're not, does this make sense? The idea that we would accept some sort of a half a loaf interpretation of the hell and damnation that George Bush wants to rain on the Iranian people. Well, yeah. And so I decided that it was not necessary to use a nuclear weapon. We have instead used profound, tremendous conventional weapons to stop the rogue regime in Iran that wants to kill your mother and take away your Bible. And I don't want anybody making any mistakes about my feelings about Iran. There's no difference between George Bush and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. They are both crazy-ass religious fundamentalists who believe that they have a special appointment with destiny and are chosen by God to usher in a new world. Let's see, on our side of the religious divide, we call it the New Jerusalem. I don't know what they call it on their side. It's a new something or another. And it's all going to be frisbees and wheat checks if we can just make Jesus come back or make the Mahdi come back. If you're any kind of a reasonable, rational individual, stop and gnaw on that bone for a minute. We are talking about human beings in positions of tremendous power who think they are going to bring back somebody who has already died. I mean, it was funny in Young Frankenstein. This ain't funny. This is deadly. And it's not just deadly to sweet little children who have no idea of what's going on, but happen to have been born on a chunk of this planet that's called Iran. It's deadly to us, too. It's deadly to the soldiers that we will send into that mess and who will come back and who will have children that look like that look like nothing that they ever dreamed of when they thought about the little people that they wanted to bring into the world and nurture and love. Oh, God. I have stopped, and I'm like some sort of stone carven critter on some cathedral somewhere, some gargoyle gnawing on a bone. Because it's running around inside my head and it's making me absolutely insane. Not crazy enough to vote for a Republican, but you get my drift. Let's go to the phones. Andrew is with us from New York. Hey, Andrew, you're head on.
Hey, how you doing, Bob? Gargoyle.
Yeah, I'm in gargoyle mode, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can see your point with Iran and, you know, this is just bait so they can drop conventionals and everybody will be like, oh, that's okay. They're only dropping conventional bombs, not nuclear bombs.
Well, stop and think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
It does one segment of industry a little bit of good to build one thermonuclear bunker buster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot better for the defense military-industrial complex to just start building conventional Tomahawk missiles at, what, $1 million a pop?
And yes, and you're exactly right, because, you know, they said they want to take out everything. They want to take out their ability to even research nuclear technology. So,
well, they want to take out their
bombs to take out universities and, you know, laboratories.
Yeah, they're going to take out university laboratories. They're going to take out military bases,
yeah.
Infantry installations. Did you see the story last week, Andrew, about how Iran was claiming it shot down one of our spy drones?
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Do you know? Yeah. But these madmen don't just do things.
The problem is, though, is that if they either drop a nuke or they drop conventional, it's all going to end up in the same result. Okay.
Yeah, World War III.
World War III.
That we started.
Russia, China, and even Europe. I mean, you have a lot of pipelines going across there and a lot of, you know, energy commerce.
Sure.
Iran, it's one of the biggest, you know, oil fields on Earth, so.
Right.
It's going to affect everybody. It's going to be a global effect. This is not just going to be Iran. It's going to affect everything.
Yeah, I don't know that necessarily anybody will come here and invade the United States, but, preemptive war is preemptive war, and we said it's good for us, and that means it's good for the world.
But they could use economic sanctions on us, though.
Sure they could.
Or they could, you know, divest out of the dollar. There's other ways to, you know, pull the rug from under the, you know, big aggressive bear, you know.
Right.
So it's like whether they do it conventionally or nuclear, it's all going to end up in the same result, and our troops are going to catch hell, and that's the bottom line. I mean, they're going to be caught in between a quagmire. They're going to be, instead of the Civil War, then it's going to be Islam against the United States.
Yeah.
That's
and
the bottom line.
And we're going to, I mean, do you remember when the Kosovo invasion took place and all the Republicans said, well, you can't have this here invasion with just military air power. You got to have boots on the ground.
Yep. And
we don't have any boots to put on the ground.
No,
so
we
that,
don't.
That means, okay, so what's the next step in the process? How do you build a military when you don't have enough people to put in one?
Yeah, and you don't have the money to finance one. It's just, you know, it's like if they go over there and they do that, and it's just chaos. That's it. It'll be utter chaos, and I don't know. It kind of leaves me a little bit speechless in some sense because I don't understand their motive because, you know, you can say, like, a lot of the military generals talking about they want to, you know, they want Rumsfeld to resign. Then you got people internal saying that they'll resign if they go through with the, you know, nuclear option on the table, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
When even the conventional way is stupid, too. You would say, hey, well, what if I don't, you know, retire with my full pension or whatever? It won't mean a damn thing. You know?
And what if you can't live long enough to draw your pension?
So what? You got your full pension. Big deal. You're dead the next day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's insanity.
And, you know, I'm glad to hear this kind of stuff from you, Andrew, because after a while I begin to feel like my eyes are rolling around in their sockets and because I'm trying to get on the same chessboard with these freaks and trying to think like them will make you a little bit nuts after a while.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. But, you know, it's all mental gymnastics. And the way they're playing the game, it's like, yeah, you can say we're a step behind them, but now they already showed their hand before. So now we can preempt them, you know?
Well, you know, maybe that's our hope.
I think it may have to take the international community to do it because I don't see it here.
Well, the other thing that scares me is we do not, and you know, this was just, you know, one of those dumb history lessons, Andrew. We don't know what kind of agreements have been made between which nations.
Yeah. Well, there was that article in Japan.
Yeah.
It came out of Japan saying that, you know, they were talking tough to Iran, and I'm like, that totally, like, kind of boggled my mind, because I was like, what is going on here, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Japan? I mean, like, dude, what?
I know. You're going where I've been for the last couple of days, and you know you go there too, and you're and then again your eyes just go. You know.
I don't get it. And it's just like I heard Joe Wilson today on Randy's show.
Yeah.
And sound like he was waffling. If you ask me, I think somebody's been stepping on toes.
Well, I don't, you know, but you got to remember. I mean, even if you're talking about, we got to be careful about who we lionize. Oh, we're out of time, Andrew.
Yes.
We got to do the news, but you got to be careful who we lionize because some of these people were playing in that cesspool and you know in the let's make war on somebody cesspool.
Decorated Reagan veteran, but
yeah.
I mean, hey.
I know.
What you think?
It All does right, indeed. Bob. Thanks, Andrew. Have a great night.
Yep. You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our pal Andrew in New York. It's time for the news, time for a little break. We'll be back. Your phone calls are welcome, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366.
Head on Radio Network News, I'm Bruce Birch. Who's lying, the expert or the State Department? The U.S. State Department said today that Iran could produce a nuclear bomb within 16 days, which is, according to Hans Blix, the former U.N. weapons inspector, impossible. In a statement made April 3rd, Blix said it would take 5 years for Iran to enrich enough uranium to create a nuke. Scott Ritter, former weapons inspector, has also said that Iran has a small amount of weapons-grade uranium to enrich, supplied by China. He further says that domestic supplies of uranium within Iran are not pure enough to create weapons-grade nuclear material. Ever the queen of rhetoric, Condoleezza Rice said today that, quote, it is time for action, unquote, on international demands for Iran to stop uranium enrichment. British and foreign ministers shared her assertion. A car bomb went off in Iraq today, killing 26 human beings and wounding 7 more. The bomb, which was detonated in a Shiite town north of Baghdad, was targeting a Shiite mosque. No word from the U.S. about possible ties to the ongoing Iraqi civil war. Meanwhile, the U.S. has lost more than 2,359 soldiers in Bush's war. In a shift from recent legislation, GOP leaders are backing away from making undocumented immigration a felony. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is now blaming Democrats for wanting to retain the felony provision, which has some lawmakers backpedaling. The undocumented immigrants to the U.S. have staged massive protests demanding their ability to be U.S. citizens. The White House lashed out at reporters today for reporting the facts. Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, scolded the White House press corps for reporting on the story that Bush knew that trailers he said were being used to manufacture biological weapons were not, in fact, being used for that, and that Bush knew this when he said it. The report in question, which refuted the president's assertion that the trailers were WMD-related, was given to the president days before he did, in fact, say that the trailers were WMD-related. In Santa Cruz, California today, military recruiters were blocked from gaining access to a University of California building where a job fair was being held. A student-led group, Students Against War, apparently kept the recruiters from entering the building. This is News on the Horn, the head-on radio network.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best...
$100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Over 15,000 people are ill from the events of 9/11. WTC cough, an ailment that apparently has created bad health for people who were near the World Trade Center that fateful day, has been on the increase since 2001.
We'll be with you in just a minute.
A number of formerly healthy, non-smoking people are now symptomatic with this illness. In an ironic turnabout, St. Bernard Parish in Louisiana is thinking of hiring the consulting firm of Michael Heck of a Job Brownie Brown to help them negotiate the maze of federal bureaucracy that has followed since the Hurricane Katrina tragedy. Brown is expected to pitch his firm to the parish to a near-capacity crowd. In a story reminiscent of the Twilight Zone, a town in California which has not held municipal elections in 20 years is thrust into the national spotlight. When it finally held elections and the clerk, who was responsible for counting the votes, has refused. The town has had four mayors in its 100-year history, all relatives of the town's founders. Nearly all the houses in the town are owned by the town itself. The established political order was upset earlier this year when three new residents filed for seats on the town council. One of them, Don Huff, was followed, had his electricity cut off, and was eventually evicted, he says, for standing up for a seat at the town council. Lawsuits have been filed to figure out who indeed can lead Vernon, California, for the near future. Silvio Berlusconi is not willing to cede his prime minister's seat in Italy. Berlusconi believes that spoiled ballots may contain a victory for him. His opposition, Romano Prodi, feels secure in his election and is moving forward with cabinet talks later this week. Over 234,000 seals were expected to be killed today in Canada. The contentious seal hunt is a government-sanctioned and is done to, quote, cull the seal population, unquote. The Canadian government says there are 6 million baby harp seals in existence. No word on why exactly these animals are a threat to humankind. Alaska, known for its open spaces and liberal privacy laws, is taking a step toward more governmental intrusion into personal privacy. Alaska's Governor Frank Murkowski is advocating the recriminalization of the private possession of marijuana. Presently, a person can have up to 4 ounces in his or her private home legally. For the Head On Radio Network, my name is Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hey, all right. Coming up on 7 minutes after the hour, and like our buddy Brian said there, well, you know how to get in touch with the program. And we're going to try something that we've tried a couple of times, and I hope it will work. Our good friend Lonnie is online, and he's Skyping in instead of calling on traditional telephony. If you would bring Lonnie up, please, Agnes. Right there. Yep.
Hello.
Are you there, Lonnie?
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you fine. Do you hear me?
Oh, good. Yeah, I hear you good.
Wonderful.
Well, it's working, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Amazing, this stuff. I was a little intimidated to try it before.
Well, you know, you've called in a couple of times, and it was right as the show was ending, and doggone it, you know, we couldn't do it.
But, well, you know what threw me was Jadeite savings time again.
Ah.
You see, I'm over here in Tokyo, and it's early in the morning, so I have my email and my work, and I should work, you know.
Well,
and I got that stuff to do. So I try and get that out of the way, and I that was my mistake last time. I called right at the end of the hour, but I thought I had another hour on the air. So.
Well, this just amazes me that I can sit here in a little studio in West Virginia and have a conversation as clear as a bell with a guy sitting in Tokyo.
Yeah, in a little office here in Tokyo. It's just amazing, isn't it?
It is. So obviously you're an expatriate, Lonnie. What is it that took you to Japan?
Well, actually, it was my Japanese wife. I married a Japanese gal in the States, and then the Reagan economy basically threw me over here.
So
back in the 80s.
is there a significant expatriate community over there?
Yes, there is. But they usually don't stay as long as I have. People usually come here, earn, save some money, and then head on back with a little nest egg.
That's amazing. What kind of a sense do you get from the Japanese people? Are you a fluent Japanese speaker?
Not fluent, I would say. I get by. Yes.
So what kind of do you get a sense from people that you see or interact with over there as to what the stat or you know where the U.S. is now in their estimation?
Oh yeah, U.S. has gone crazy.
I would think that the Japanese angle on the notion that George Bush might nuke another country might have, you know, it might have a little bit of a special perspective.
It's a little bit of a sore spot, yeah, I would imagine.
So,
I can't really give you a nutshell view, but it's one of it's a different kind of shock and awe they're feeling right now, and they really wonder what's going on here. You know, the reason I wanted to contact you in the beginning was that I was just really impressed that so many of your listeners were so capable of independent thought, given what is on your media over there.
Yeah.
You know, we get a different spread of media, and we also have, because of cable television now, and some tie-ups with Japanese corporations, we do get some NBC feeds, ABC feeds, things like that. And I'm just amazed that anybody really knows what's going on at all, given what your media is doing to you. This mainstream media is part and parcel of the whole problem.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what our friend David was talking about earlier with regard to the way that the mainstream media covers a march. If it's people marching to stop a war, nah, we're not going to fool with that so much. But if there's a chance to whip up the American people into some, you know, good old fashioned patriotic red, white and blue racist xenophobia, well, you know, there'll be round the clock coverage.
Absolutely. And did you notice, Sue, in the early days of the immigrant marches, there were a lot of Mexican flags, and how people were talking about, oh, that's what they want to re-annex California and all the land that they lost before. But immediately after that kind of talk went out, did you notice all the flags are American now?
Well, yes, I did, and that was
we are American.
Yeah, that was a deliberate effort on several people's parts, and I passed along a few suggestions. I said, for God's sakes, you know, get some American flags, because I sympathize with these folks. I sympathize with a working human being anywhere on planet Earth.
Well, absolutely. And what we find with globalization everywhere is that work people are getting the back seat, and the middle class is being attacked by this globalization.
Yeah, because
it's a concentration of power and money in a few hands, and everyone else will be accepting any kind of wages for any kind of job pretty soon now.
Well, exactly, and again, you know, we've got this notion here in Fortress America that you are not fortunately not saddled with, Lonnie. That somehow America is the only place on Earth that has a middle class. There's a middle class all over planet Earth, and it's being squeezed everywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look at Europe and look at Japan, especially. Japan has been squeezed for a really long time now. You know, Japan used to be the place where you would go to work and retire and and live well.
Yeah.
Well, what? Go to bed?
Yeah. I didn't get on the button quite fast enough. The kids are making some noise in the background.
It's too early for me to go to bed.
Yeah.
We haven't.
Yeah, we haven't gotten around to building the freestanding studio yet. So you know, never a dull moment around here. But you know, I studied a good bit of you know, I was an English major in college, and especially in the line of poetry and poetics and stuff. So I read a whole bunch of Japanese poetry in translation. And West Virginia University, interestingly enough, has a very large Japanese exchange student population by virtue of the fact that there is a branch campus somewhere in the home islands.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
University of Virginia?
West Virginia.
University of West Virginia. I have not. I've not come across that.
They've got a huge presence.
I was only impressed with your historical knowledge there.
Well, thank you.
You were talking back a few days ago, all the way about the Aztecs and the ancient. Yes, it was the immigration. Connection there. Yes. I remember that now. But again, I just called to say how impressed I am with your listenership, that they actually can get past this media nonsense that we're being fed, how great we are and how afraid we should be. I'm an American, so I'm saying.
Sure. You still got your citizenship and everything?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm a Vietnam vet, too, so I've been through this. I've been through this nonsense.
You've seen this movie. We know how it ends.
Yeah. I've been here. Well, I hope it ends as horrible as it was. I hope it ends as well as the last time around. But these guys are on a course to create their own future of some kind that doesn't include anybody else except their nonsense. Very, very frightening. We should be afraid, but not for the reasons that the media is telling us to be afraid. I don't understand why people are not in the streets in the millions. It looks to me like the idea, like I think one of your callers mentioned earlier, is just to keep us too busy on our own fronts, maintaining our own little worlds, that we just keep moving along. Nothing to see here. Just
right.
Keep moving along. There's nothing to see here.
These are not the droids you were looking for. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's all I had to say.
Well,
and,
Lonnie,
a great job.
Well, thank you very kindly. I'm a little bit of a simpleton where this technology is concerned. I'm sitting here in abject stunned amazement that I'm having this wonderful conversation with you, knowing where you are. I'm fascinated, and
I was intimidated actually to try it because oh gosh, is my mic volume going to work and is this going to work and how's it going to sort it? It seems to be fine.
It is.
It's simple. Everybody, Skype is cool.
Skype is. Now the next step is I'm looking for some technology and I haven't found it yet where I can take because you'll notice when we accepted your call, we were in the middle of the news. And I don't have any way, with a regular call coming in, I can put people on hold. I don't have any way to do that with this. So that's the next step is taking the technology to the next level.
Right.
So it's
right.
But anytime
for on-air calling. Yeah.
Right. Anytime the spirit moves you, Lonnie. Pick up the phone. Click the computer. Whatever the new terminology is. I'd love to hear from you.
Okay, brother. Thank you kindly.
All right.
The good work, folks.
Thank you very kindly.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. He is, and what a... What a nice compliment that was. And it wasn't necessarily directed to me. It was directed to you guys.
That's right.
I am so fortunate, lucky, blessed. I don't know what the right term is. But I was having a conversation with my good friend Bruce Birch about the listenership to this program and the other Head On Radio Network programs like his All Things and John Fox and Bruce's Fourth Estate Radio. Joe Vecchio's program, Grayson Rama. We are all extremely fortunate in the quality and the caliber of our listenership. You will not hear, I guarantee this, you will not hear callers of this quality on any right-wing radio show. Because right-wing radio will not support intellect of this quality. And I'm not talking about mine, I'm talking about yours. That's why we invented this idea of conversation radio. If you can imagine it, for 20 years, nothing but a steady, filthy stream of right-wing hate has been pouring out of AM radios in everything from Bentleys to Ford Pintos. And in little radios on the kitchen table. And the only way, and it's a powerful, powerful medium. And the only way that people had to feel like they were included in the process was, well, yes, Rush, sweet Jesus, I'm a conservative too. If you give people the opportunity to have a choice and to hear real issues talked about with a level of intelligence not from the host, but from fascinating individuals all over this country and all over this world. You will see a sea change. So if you tell somebody about Head On, and God knows I'm grateful if you do, it's not about me. It's about y'all. It's about America. It's about how smart and how trenchant we all can be. Now, I know we get pessimistic about a certain segment of this society from time to time, and by God, they earn it. But for the most part, we are sharp enough in the middle class to save our country because we have done it time after time after time. Right? Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Another smart guy, our buddy Chris in Alabama. Hey, Chris, you're Head On.
This is the Mantha Report coming to you from the Lieberman estate. Please send help. If you can't send Harry Carey now, send Marge Schott.
Oh God, yeah. Well, so if I lose the Democratic nomination, I will run as an independent.
He's got us here at his estate watching Triumph of the Wheel in reverse. Is this something about the future? I don't know. Yeah. There's a general wanting Bush to, you know, resign. Well, there's a bunch of privates want him gutted.
Yeah. Careful. That was figurative, Agent Fred.
Yes, Agent Fred, and all you little Freddies up at Northern West Virginia, how you doing?
Yeah, there at the Sugar Grove, Maple Grove.
Sugar Grove, yeah. You know, coffee stains do come out, so quit pacing. You know, that smell of deodorant in a police van that's been down the street for 3 weeks watching somebody, when it permeates through the whole building.
When it gets into the ductwork, you're just done.
Yeah, it's time to get out and walk around.
You know, I printed out your little dedicated blog entry.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated with that. Witnessing the burning of the last refuge, disturbing incursions, wars over ghosts in the administration, immigration, all of these things combine to instill a national irrationality that has spewed over its edges, spilling across an already open border. We find ourselves as a nation squealing about the smallest of events and discussing television when faced with the realities of our time. Yeah, that's brilliant, gorgeous stuff, Chris.
Well, it's true. Here we are, you know, Bush is pissed because he can't say H-bomb. He has to say nuclear. And, you know, that's what he's on television.
Yeah, and he gets busted. And I was so busy today, I didn't get a chance to get the audio. Scotty got all bent out of shape because reporters were actually calling Bush on the fact that he's a damn liar.
I didn't turn on television until the Braves came on this evening, so I'm very proud of myself.
Go Bravos.
Yeah, another thing in this... Your background's becoming public. War supplies going public. Entourage is touring bases in war zones. Gets a little damage in the background.
Yeah.
This is a time in which the enemy has custody of the Situation Room. Now that, you have to understand that sentence. When your own government has turned into the enemy,
yeah,
what do you do? A time when prisons across the world, conditions in a prison run by a government that enacted the death penalty as a rule of law, when conditions in American prisons grow like dangerous chemicals under the lens, when AIDS almost guarantees a 20-year sentence in a maximum security institution as a life sentence. After the events of September 11, 2001, sales of American flags soared to new heights while attacks on Arab civilians by flag owners became rampant.
Now, see, there's another one of those. I mentioned this in regard to the little yellow ribbon magnets for the backs of the SUVs. Those things were on the shelves of the stores in almost record time. And the same thing. There was a glut of American flags on the market. Where do they come from? It takes time to produce that stuff. Some of this was an inside job. Chris, I've followed a little bit of the Zacharias Moussaoui trial as we've gone along. And today, of course, you know, they played the black box tape from flight, was it 93, that went down in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
And
let's all get the families of the, you know, of those who died, and let's put them on Vanity Fair cover, and let's get them all dressed up in some kind of outfits. Let's just have fun with it.
Yeah, because, you know, they're toy human beings. But the thing is, I watched this, and you know, it could very well be that that tape is real, okay? Because this is not one of those things where one thing is mutually exclusive of the other. That tape may have been very much the last moments, and God, why you would want to do that to the victims' families, I don't know.
I can just see some, you know, quote-unquote White House officials in the basement of the White House going, we have got a catch slogan. Did you hear that? Let's roll. Oh, my God, let's go.
Yeah, that's exactly how they think, Chris. But the thing is, I listened to all that, and I knew, but, you know, because, and I'm, this is no big deal, but, you know, I know a guy who...
Yeah, you do. You do.
Saw the damn thing missiled out of the... they shot the plane down, okay?
Yeah. There's also... footage on the web and serious discussions about how the buildings fell on September 11th, that they had to have fallen with a shape charge the way the building fell straight down.
Oh, I know. And the thing is, I get really antsy about getting too deep into that subject, simply because if we spend much more time at all looking at that, you know, while we're looking over our shoulder backwards,
it's gonna happen again.
Yeah, they're planning the next one.
Absolutely.
And that's why I'm trying to do this, you know, whether it's the chess analogy or you know, Texas Hold'em or whatever. You know, when it dawned on me right here during the show, Chris, that the whole reason for letting that information out to Seymour Hersh was to get, you know, America, liberals, progressives,
yeah.
No, damn it, we will not tolerate nuclear first strikes. And then they come back around, they go, okay, well, we won't do no first strike, but with the nuclear weapon, yeah, we'll stay conventional. And it's, oh, God.
I will go ahead and make a prediction. I've been thinking about this for about a month now. I will make a prediction.
All right.
The next attack on American soil,
mm-hmm,
will be in Chicago.
Okay, why? Because that's gonna make our dear friend Ben Birch real uneasy.
Well, I'm sorry, Ben, but it's... really, you know, it's really close to middle America.
Okay.
You know, if you can hit them where it hurts. You got to think, as nightmarish as you can possibly think.
Oh, it'll be another blue state. There's no doubt. You know, New York, Illinois,
I say that, but
California.
I just have a feeling that's where it's going to be.
It's not going to happen in Texas.
No.
It's not going to happen where you are, even though you're 15 miles from just an absolute hellish monstrosity of a nuclear plant. Used to be the largest single reactor in the world.
Yeah, and, you know, and ever since you and I have been living here, I've been, well, you're not a resident here, but ever since this thing's been there, we're going to have to shut it down for a little bit and work on it. Okay, it's going to open back up. No, we're going to have to work on it again. Everybody, a lot of people that I went to school with used to say that if we got into a nuclear war, they were just going to drive over there at Browns Ferry and lean up against a fence. Because why suffer?
Yeah, and just wait for the flash, because we knew that it was targeted.
We knew exactly. We've got a nuclear reactor. We've got, oh, my God, the space race in Huntsville.
Yeah.
At Redstone Arsenal. We've got a humongous dam here. And if that dam were to go...
Oh, yeah, sure.
My,
or Wheeler or
Waterloo would just disappear.
Nickajack Dam, Norris, sure.
Yeah. We've got...
But what I'm trying to get across here, Chris, none of that's going to happen.
No.
The attack will always be in a blue state, because these monstrous bastards consider that blue state people are expendable and deserving of that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. You know... they always talk about middle America. You never, even my daughter and I always joke around that the Weather Channel, when the Weather Channel has to say the state of Alabama, they must cringe. We don't want to have to talk about down there. Alabama, Mississippi, y'all just go away, leave us alone. But I guarantee you, if you do one of these quote-unquote polls you see on network news, if you ask them where the next attack is going to be, no one, hardly anyone, will say Middle America. The heart, the quote.
Well, because theoretically, that's hard to get at.
Yeah. Well, you know, you talk about coming down the highway through West Virginia and not stopping from Canada. Well, Illinois is right up there.
Well, sure.
And I just get this sick feeling that that's where it's going to be. Now, I wish it was going to happen out in the pasture somewhere where nobody gets touched. But just like I did an interview with Jake Berry, a real good friend of mine, that mm-hmm. I'll post on my Chris Mansell blog in the next couple of days. And he says that the first attack on the, not the World Trade Center, but...
Pentagon?
The bombing, in New York, before September 11th.
Oh, the World Trade Center bombing,
World Trade Center, yeah.
1993.
Yeah. That was evidence enough to tick us off what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't want it to happen. But I'm, like everybody else, I lived among these people for quite a few years now in this administration, if you want to call it that. And we know it's going to happen. It's awful. It's sickening to even think about. But you just have to. It's like getting a dart, throwing it over your back at the U.S. map.
Yeah.
Who are we going to cut out today?
Well, it's frightening as hell.
Fund the world's terrorists, and they will get you for it.
No, it's true. Yeah, I know. The MansellReport.blogspot.com, correct?
Yeah.
The Mansell Report.
The Mansell Report.
And that's Mansell, M-A-N-S-E-L, report.blogspot.com. Chris, thanks so much.
All right. Take care, bud.
Have a good evening. And a quick break. We come back and roll downhill. Yeah, there's a couple of weird little odds and ends we should probably tie off. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
I can't believe.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Be sure. I mean, yeah, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a crap.
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he
guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
It feels so good to be back. Mouth every word, memorize every line. I spit it once, refuel, re-energize and rewind. I can sight to the blind, mind sight through the mind. I exercise my right to express when I feel it's time. This is all in your mind, what you interpret it as. I say the fight, you take it as I'ma whip someone's ass. If you don't understand, don't even bother to ask. A father who has grown up with a fatherless past, who has grown up now to rap phenomenon.
Conservatives? We don't need no stinking conservatives. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Mastered his craft slash. Entrepreneur who has helped launch a few more rat bags. Who's had a few obstacles thrown his way through the.
Yeah, so he's got some personal problems. Who doesn't? It's a hell of a piece, Mosh. Eminem. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. You know how to reach the show. 877-443-2366. And, of course, email comes to Bob at headonradio.com. We are chatting madly away in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. It's pretty easy. It's free. Jump right in there. I think you'll enjoy it. Now, our buddy Andy in Wales says that tape is a fake, talking about the black box tape from Flight 93 that crashed into the ground in a ball of fire. And yet, you know, because these black boxes are manufactured to withstand, you know, the old joke, you know, those things withstand a crash, why can't they make the plane out of the black box stuff? They're designed to withstand all manner of just conflagrations and destructive forces. That black box they found. Couldn't find the black box from the Pentagon. Couldn't find the two black boxes from the ones that went into the. No, I couldn't find those. But Andy says, that tape is a fake. Why are they talking English? He says, we were told by the BBC, no audio, the hijackers, quote unquote, spoke in broken English. But they were all Arabic speakers. Yeah, there's a whole lot of hmm. It's not mutually exclusive to say that, you know, that. Look, they could have dummied up the tape. Or there could be some aspects of it that are real. But the plane was shot down. Where's the soundbite from Rumsfeld? I don't have it. I remember seeing it when it happened, though, when he was discussing Flight 93. And he said, the plane that was shot down in Pennsylvania, crashed. I mean, it's like before the war started when, back then it was Ari Fleischer, when he came out and said, well, we're getting ready to kick off Operation Iraqi Liberation. And then some wiseacre in the bowels of the White House went, Jesus Christ, that spells oil. And the next day it was Operation Iraqi Freedom. So, Freudian slips? Yeah, I mean, you know, calling Dr. Freud. And our friend Roz writes and says, just, and this is from last night's program, listening on radiopower.org, runs 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, radiopower.org, listed on iTunes. Just heard you read the immigrants poem and warned people that they would be getting it from right-wing nut family members. You nailed that. I got that poem about a month ago from my mother. Totally rhetorical, she says. Now, what am I supposed to do about that? Sad, so sad. And it is. And it turns out, that thing, and, you know, no right-wing nut in America is that creative. Because as poetry goes, it was, you know, awful, and yet captured so much, and was, you know, if you're sending it to the right people, it's going to be very evocative and very effective. And I was informed earlier today by our friend Ollie. He says, I'm unsure if this poem started in the U.S. and shot me a link, and lo and behold, I went there, and boom. You know how the end of the poem said, tell every American taxpayer you know about this, send this poem to every American taxpayer you know? Agnes, you weren't back here when I was, but she'd already read it because it showed up in her email. But the whole thing, you know, I cross ocean, poor and broke, take bus, see employment folk, nice man treat me good in there, say I need to see welfare, yada, 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 yada. Well, this version, which has some very interesting photography along the side of it, I must say, ends with, we think New Zealand darn good place, too darn good for the white man race. If they know like us, they can scram, got lots of room in Pakistan. Send this to every New Zealand taxpayer that you know. Because these right-wing freaks just aren't, you know, they're not that creative. What they can do is steal stuff. And so it's making the rounds and you know, America is under siege. Oh, God, 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 God. And Ollie notes, yeah, the poem sucks. And it does. I mean, but then again, maybe that explains ever so much, because there's that line in there about how great the medical care is. You know, kids need dentists, wife needs pills, and how, you know, bang, it's all right there for you. Well, New Zealand has a functioning medical health care system for all New Zealanders. So, yeah, well, it's what Lonnie said. You guys are quick on the draw, you're quick on the think, and frankly, you have the potential to help save this once great nation. You really, really do. Now, it would be unfair of me, given that this is Wednesday night and it is, after all, prayer meeting edition, it would be unfair of me not to at least bring at least one little poking a stick at the Fundy's story. And you remember, and I mentioned this last night, I gotta quit saying that we like I'm the Queen of England or I got a mouse in my pocket or something. But, you know, it's me and Agnes, we. But last night I brought up in I believe the conversation with our dear friend Fritz from New Mexico, I brought up the story about the fossil that had been discovered that was sort of like a fish gator. And inside the flippers were wrists and elbows. Well, here's another one. And this, you know, again, this is just going to get the, you know, it's another one of those Janet Parsall talking to Randy Rhodes moments where, you know, you stick your fingers in the la, 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 I'm not listening, I'm not listening, I'm not listening, I can't hear you. From the Associated Press, Dateline Washington, the latest fossil unearthed from a human ancestral hotspot in Africa. I never come from no Africa, I ain't that way. Allows scientists to link together the most complete chain of human evolution so far. Whoops, the baby. This 4.2 million year old fossil discovered in northeastern Ethiopia, 4.2 million years old, Lucy, which was Homo habilis? Yeah. She was only 2.5 million years old. 4.2 million year old fossil discovered in northeastern Ethiopia helps scientists fill in the gaps of how human ancestors made the giant leap from one species to another. No, that was put there by Satan in the record to confound the unbelievers and test the faith of the true Christians. That's because the newest fossil, the species Australopithecus anamensis. Ooh, got it on the first try. Australopithecus anamensis was found in the region of the Middle Awash, where seven other human-like species spanning nearly 6 million years and three major phases of human development were previously discovered. We just found the chain of evolution, the continuity through time, study co-author and Ethiopian anthropologist Bethan Asfaw said in a phone interview from Addis Ababa. I'll tell you what, this is called taxing Bob's abilities. One form evolved to another. This is evidence of evolution in one place through time. And of course, you know, then again, the greatest evidence for there being no evolution is George Bush and James Dobson and Jerry Falwell and all that. But, you know, this is going to be another one of those moments where they have to just ignore things. And I referenced last night in my conversation with Fritz that, and I hate to be mean about things, but at some point in time, I think scientists need to stand up and say, we're not doing all this medical breakthrough stuff so that freaks can continue to procreate on the planet and tell people that, you know, there was a conversation between a chatty water moccasin and a cave woman. Yeah, Pangea. No, that was on the lost continent of Mu, dear. Yes, the lost continent of Mu. So, you know, I want this little, people who believe in evolution need not get flu shots. Okay? And you don't need to take no Cipro, no erythromycin, no Z-Pax. Because, you know, that's all evolutionarily based. And it's real, 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 real. And yet out there, I joke. But I've heard this talk. I have been told, you know, eyeball to eyeball, that dinosaurs are in the fossil record to confound the unbelievers. I have been told, wait for it. Oh, yeah. I have been told that dinosaurs are in the fossil record because all the earth was hurly-burly during the Great Flood, and it just looks like they're 260 million years old. They're really only 4,500. I mean, I've been told that the Great Flood happened because there used to be another layer of water vapor around. Wait, no. These people work hard on this. You got to give them their due. There was a layer of water vapor, I guess, just somewhere between the upper atmosphere and the Van Allen radiation belt, okay? And the Great Flood happened when God caused that belt to fall out of the atmosphere and flood the world. No, there's no evidence for that. Of course there's not. Don't kid yourself. Come on, you're the smart people. No, and wait. And the reason that in the first part of Genesis you get Methuselah living to 900 and something odd years old, and his son living to 700 and so forth and so on, is that they were protected against all forms of radiation by that water vapor belt, and that after the water vapor belt fell and flooded the earth, that at that point more radiation got through, causing people to live shorter lives. You know, so that, you know, you wind up with Abraham and Sarah and, you know, how can I have a child? For lo, I am past my childbearing years, being as I am 89. And all, yeah, so they work really, really, really hard at this. Bless their little hearts. Or whatever's in that cavity there that would be a heart anywhere else. And, you know, oh, this one, yeah. I said something earlier about you never know until the shooting starts who has agreements with whom. Because see, they're not gonna, if Iran has a secret agreement that says if they get nuked by the United States, China gets to nuke the U.S., they're not gonna go over and file that with the clerk, in the Senate. They're gonna keep that quiet. Just like a lot of the crap that was in front of World War One. It's like the Monty Python sketch where the guy says, oh, now I have to put my foot in the bucket and sing. You don't know what's gone down until the shooting starts. This is from RIA Novosti. The chief of Russia's general staff said Monday he could neither confirm nor deny reports that Ukraine had sold 250 nuclear warheads to Iran. Russia's general staff has no information about whether Ukraine has given 250 nuclear warheads to Iran or not. General Yuri Valievsky, also deputy defense minister, said in response to an article in Novaya Gazeta newspaper Monday, "I do not comment on unsubstantiated reports." The newspaper said that Ukraine had failed to return 250 warheads to Russia in the 1990s when the former Soviet Republic declared itself a nuclear-free zone. Yeah, failed to return. You know, this is a little bit more complicated and a little bit more serious than maybe that old library book that you've still got on your shelf that's probably, you know, you got $1 million in fines by now. The paper suggested the warheads could have been sold to a third country, including Iran. See, he said, "I don't comment on unsubstantiated reports." But before that, he said that he could neither confirm nor deny it. I like the deny part. Tell me Ukraine did not send 200... And, well, you know, we had that story, what, 2-3 years ago about the fact that there are a few old Soviet suitcase nukes wandering around out there. But we won't find out about them unless we nuke Iran. Then we will learn the hard way. Or Israel will learn the hard way. Oh, but wait a minute. They want this to happen. Jesus. They want that. They do. They want this to happen. This is the part where they, "And please let us be part of thy selected kingdom when Armageddon comes. Come, Lord Jesus. Amen." They want this. That's why I say that these people hate our country, these religion industrialists. They get it, you know, this is not because I think you don't get it. It's great. It's so insane. It is so terrifying. It is so horrifying that it is hard to grasp that you might be sharing a nation right now. And by George, you are sharing a nation right now with a significant segment of the population, 20-30% of all of the United States, who thinks that if we start a war with Iran and use a thermonuclear device, we can get the whole world involved in a conflagration that'll make a dead guy come back. Because, I mean, you know, even the most traditional Orthodox Christian theology acknowledged that he died. Jesus. And he rose again from the dead and ascended into the heavens. Where'd he go? Well, never mind. But they think if they can start World War III that it's going to be better for them. Yeah, are you on board with this? Do you really, 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 and for truly dig what they're thinking, what they say, what they believe? These people are convinced that if they can start a mass slaughter of hundreds of millions of human beings via nuclear warfare, that they will indeed go to the sacred circus tent and get to see Jesus. And they have George Bush in their pocket. All right? This is why I'm sitting around, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm right. Maybe it's about setting it up where conventional war with Iran looks a little bit more palatable because they aren't going to nuke. Maybe that's the con. Maybe that's the gig. I don't know. But part of me thinks it isn't, because there are people who... Well, I think I mentioned once upon a time, when I was a kid growing up in Alabama, I walked into somebody's apartment, somebody's home, and portrait size hanging on the wall was a photograph of a nuclear bomb going off. You know, where most people would have Pinky and Blue Boy. There was a nuclear bomb going off. That segment of the population exists in the United States, and they are not tiny, and they are not a fringe group. James Dobson is out there every day with, what, 10, 11, 12? Now, he says he's got more listeners than Flush. And he's telling them every day, "Come, Lord Jesus, in a nuclear blast." He's telling America doesn't have to worry, for you are on God's good side, and he will not let the fallout fall out on you. I don't know what you do to stop these people. Again, not so much with the marching orders. But you cannot be afraid of 80% of the American people identify themselves. Never mind. 30% of them believe, that wasn't really wine that Jesus was drinking. That was just grape juice. They only called it wine because they didn't have a word for grape.
Fermentation?
The first thing you have to do is be willing to speak out. When you catch people talking this crap, you have to look at them and have the nerve to say, you're kidding, right? You don't really believe that garbage, do you? Because if you do not speak out, they get stronger. Because they are like some sort of Star Trek critter, and they feed on fear, and they feed on hate, and they feed on death. And every time that they're able to talk this crap and no one is there in the marketplace of ideas that is guarded and protected by the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, every time that there's not someone there countering their stupidity and their hate and their anger, they get a little bit stronger. And at this point, a little bit stronger is enough, because they're plenty strong as it is. So I apologize for being sort of a screaming, meme-y, scared and terrified person. But all other things being equal, I would like to live to see grandchildren and, like, grandchildren who grow up and not melt or die with horrible radiation sickness or see anybody else die that way either. Oh, never mind. Depleted uranium. Damn. We're done for tonight. Yes, dear?
Fill a bunch of helium-filled, people-shaped balloons, take them to D.C. and let them float up.
Oh, okay. Agnes wants to fill human-shaped balloons with helium and let them float up and have a little rapture in Washington, D.C. Anybody know where you can get life-size human balloons?
Watch them jump.
Yeah, it'd be like a sort of a right-wing Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. All right, we're done. For the most part, Agnes produced the program. Our many thanks tonight to Tamara Drought. Strapped is the name of the book. Run by, have a read, order it. You will enjoy it. It's good for thinking. Brian Reznor announces the program. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Ben Birch archives this program and maintains the stream of this and all the other fine programs on the Head On Radio Network at whiterosesociety.org. Peter Godbold is our network and computer consultant of Godbold Computers. We appreciate all of his efforts. I've learned so much from Peter. And, of course, the show happens every night because of the dedication and the hard work of thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting the growth and the formation of the Head On Radio Network, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.